I want to begin with just a few thank yous. Like last year, I once again want to thank Jaisley Bell, who is the one who conceived of this idea of having the program and having it here in Yerushalayim together, have the vision and the initiative. Once again, we want to thank Rabbi Rob Shore. Last year he was in America, but this year we have the schus of having him in person to help him with all the technical details, and he helped with the advertising as well on the YU Torah side. I want to thank as well Jay Noah Zwiebel, along with his colleague, Saul and Rebecca Lubetsky, who are sponsoring the program. We thank them very, very much for their generosity. And I want to thank one last person in particular, and that's Rav Soloveitchik. As most of us know, but it still bears repeating, Rav Soloveitchik transformed Tisha B'Av. As far as I'm aware, there was no one before him, certainly not on his level, but I don't know if there was literally anyone before him who studied and taught the Kinos on the level that he did when he started. And that has had a ripple effect and impact not only on his Talmidim, but we see now in recent years with the proliferation of programs, certainly throughout the United States, and now Baruch Hashem increasing here, even in Eretz Yisrael, beyond the Rav's immediate base medrash, you could say, is the phenomenon of Tisha B'Av and Kinos programs. And whether everyone realizes it or not, it all goes back to him and his incredible genius. And in that sense, we all really owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude, and certainly much of his Torah will come through in my presentation today as well. I want to take this opportunity to welcome a number of the Rabbanim who are here today, Rabbi Brander, Rabbi Eliyahu Silverman, Rabbi Mann, Rabbi Wroblowski, Rabbi Weil. If there's anyone who I can't see sitting on the floor, I apologize, but you all honor us with your presence. In terms of the schedule, so I'm going to give an introduction now to kind of set the tone and describe what I hope will be the goal of our keynotes this morning. Then we'll start Kinos. But I want to say one thing at the outset. I'm not exactly sure how long we'll go. By which I mean to say, when the flyer and the schedule was made up, that was before any of the craziness of the last 7 weeks. And like all of you, it's been a very emotional time for me, and that emotion very much carried over into my preparation for the Kinos. And I promise you we will start Mincha at 1:20, but I'm not committing to keeping the ending at Chatzos so that we can have a shir. I think it's very possible that the emotions of the summer and of the Kinos melding together may take us through Kinos and maybe even a little extra singing right into Mincha. If anyone has to leave, I'm certainly not upset, so don't feel bad. If you have to leave early, just remember to say Ashrei Neval Etzion. But we will keep to the schedule of the 1:20 early Mincha, but how we flow into that, we'll see. We'll see how our neshamas are doing. In Kinah Kafdalid, there's a line which resonates as we begin our recital of Kinos this morning in this year. Espod b'chol shana v'shana mispeid chadash. The Balakina enjoins us to find a new hesped, to find a new voice, to find new memories, new content, new morning every year. The truth is that on a typical year, that would be the hardest obligation there is. What's due to say? We feel so distant from the Churban, it hasn't changed. But this year, it's not hard at all. It seems like every day is something new to mourn. The three boys were kidnapped on June 12th. It's exactly 7 weeks ago. And just the other day, my wife was telling me, I feel like I've been in Avelus for 7 weeks. this Tisha B'Av, no one needs any extra help to mourn. It's actually been overwhelming. In Eicha, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Mem Aleph, we read last night, Nisa levavenu al kapayim, al kel bashamayim. We lift our hearts with our hands towards heaven. What does that mean? So if you take a look, for those of you who have the Art Scroll Kinos, and the footnotes there, they mention from one of the Perushim of Rashi, that the allusion is to raising our hands, the kapayim, raising our hands in tefillah. What does it mean to put our hearts in our hands during davening? So they point out there, it means basically praying with a broken heart, praying with great kavana, which as they teach means brokenheartedly, with a broken heart. In the book about the 3 weeks in the narrow places, they quote a story from Rav Nachman Mibreslov, who gave a mashal of a king who sent away his son to be a scholar, to learn at the finest institutions, with the finest tutors, to gain all the world's wisdom. Years later, after all of his apprenticeship and study, the prince returned to the palace. After their emotional reunion, the next morning the king said he had a job, a challenge for his son. And he showed him a huge boulder at the foot of the stairs. And he asked him to carry it all the way up to the top of the castle. After a few feeble attempts, the prince quickly realized that this was impossible. And he approached his father somewhat timidly, but honestly admitted that he simply couldn't do the impossible. To which his father responded, "For all of the book learning and wisdom that you've acquired over the years, you're still lacking a certain instinct or insight." And he put a hammer in his hand and said, "All you had to do was hit the rock a few times. It would have crumbled into a few pieces, and you could have carried up all of those pieces all the way up the steps." The mashal for Rabbi Nachman is powerful, and I believe it's relevant for us today. The message is from our Father, our King, Avinu Shebashamayim, Avinu Malkeinu. Sometimes our heart feels too heavy. Sometimes we can't go all the way up those stairs. We can't go up the stairway to heaven. We feel like we're being dragged down by all the pain and by all the difficulties. We have a lave of Evan. We feel like we have a heart of stone, and we just can't carry it up to Shamayim. And the answer is, when we have that challenge, we have to take a hammer to it. We have to break our heart into little pieces. Because with a broken heart and little pieces, first of all, it's more manageable. We can compartmentalize, we give ourselves a little seder, we can conceptualize, we can process, we can find meaning. We can also distinguish the different components. The great Mashgiach Rav Volbi pointed out that it's not a coincidence that on Tisha B'Av we say 40 kinos. Don't worry, we're not going to say all 40. Ma'at b'kavana is better than harbei below b'kavana, but if you look in the Mafteach, there are 40 kinos for Tisha B'Av. It's not a coincidence. The number 40 in Tanakh and in our Machshava is always associated with transformation and change. 40 days of the Mabul to change the world, 40 years in the Midbar to change a people, the Yerach Eitanim, or at least the initial part of Tshuva, from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur, 40 days, a mikvah, Arba'im Sa. Why is it that 40 is always the number that's associated with transformation, with change? So a Hasidish and a mystical explanation that I once saw many years ago strikes me as being very relevant to today's avoda. When we talk about something called gematria, even just the basic gematria that everyone believes in, that Aleph means one and Beis means two and Gimel means three, so we actually, extra explanations, additional commentary, we can take what's been istar, what's been inside of our hearts, what's been confused, what's been raging, what's been bubbling all around. Hopefully we can bring all of that to the galoy, to bring it out, to give it seder, to give it meaning. And in that way, not only will we properly mourn for Tisha B'Av in the Beis HaMikdash, but also bring a certain shlemus, transformation to ourselves as well. As the Kotzker was famous to have said, there's nothing so whole as a broken heart. If we break our heart today to little pieces, to process not only the Churban, but to put our contemporary Churban in context, I believe that we will all emerge as deeper and more whole and complete human beings. I want to begin the actual kinos now with Kina Vav. This kina, which you can find right after putting away the Torah, kina Vav, different people have different kinos books. The pages vary, but it's kina Vav in all the kinos books. First kina of the day. Shava suru meni shimuni ovrai. This is a kina written by Rabbi Elazar Kalir, the most famous of the authors of the kinos that we'll see today. Stylistically, the kina is incredibly brilliant and complicated, interweaving various words from various chapters in Eicha. Talks about how everything was shavas when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, things come to a standstill. And again, if you look at the beginnings and throughout the different stanzas, you'll see words and phrases which are taken from Eicha. Nafla Odeinu, Palgei Suf, etc. You go through the Kina as you read it, you'll see Karasi Lamavai, Hema Rimuni, various different references, painful references to Eicha. I just want to mention now an insight that our Soloveitchik used to say over every year on this Kina, which is, I believe, one of the emotions perhaps that we most strongly are all feeling this year in particular. The Rav used to point out that in the second line of the Kina, it says, "Schiu ma'os hisimuni be'edrei chaverai." In the edrei chaverai, the flocks of my, what I thought were my friends, friends in quotation marks, the fellowship of nations, I've been made filth and refuse, treated terribly. Or as we mentioned, Karasi Lamahavai. Sometimes we're in trouble, we need help, we call out to our friends, our allies, those who are no truer friend, Hema Rimuni, and they betray us, and they deceive us. And the Rav pointed out that this is also part of the Churban. The lowly station that the Jews have, the lack of Kavod Yisrael, is also a lack in Kavod Shamayim, and it is also a result of the Churban. And as the Rav would say in his day, and it's only become truer over the years into our day, this phenomena which the Rav traced to the Churban itself, to what Nebuchadnezzar did, to what Titus did, continues on to our very day. Whether it's the UN, the EU, the State Department, can I even say the White House? What have we heard in the last few weeks? They're appalled at Israel. Israel's disgraceful behavior. Israel must do more. A moral outrage, a criminal act. have somebody who was pompously titled the High Commissioner for Human Rights. You don't need to know more to already know this person must be corrupt. There's a strong possibility that international law has been violated in a manner that could amount to war crimes. And in fact, we know recently that very body, in putting forth their investigation of Israeli behavior, when it listed the possible war crimes, included Israel's, quote, outright refusal to share its Iron Dome with the governing authority of Gaza. It would be funny if it wasn't so completely evil and corrupt. We even have the dueling celebrities. I'm sure we're all getting the same emails and texts. This celebrity said this stupid thing against Israel. But don't worry, this other celebrity does support Israel. There's two problems. One is that in balance, most are against. But the bigger problem is Kavod Yisrael, the Am HaNivchar, we need some celebrity on 8Light TV or on Twitter to tell us that we're good people. The whole thing is a simon of what the Kina is talking about, of the lack of Kavod Yisrael and Kavod Shemayim. It's an unbelievable paradox. I don't know about you, but in the last few weeks this summer, certainly since this war began, I've never been more proud to be a Jew. Never in my life have I been more proud. But the MS, we also have to admit that around the world, we're held in very low regard. In his recent Jerusalem Post piece, Daniel Gordis, who wrote, I thought it was an excellent piece for those who saw it, but he had one line which is this kina, one line that came screaming out to me. The tunnels are the ultimate image of our vulnerability, the response of the world, the perfect picture of our aloneness. Am levadad yishkon, schiyu ma'os hisimuni b'edrei chaveirai. This intermingling of the kinos, of the churban, and of contemporary catastrophe was a regular theme of our Salvechik, and certainly one which will be present in our kinos and commentary today. And I'm reminded always of a similar idea which was once said by Rav Asher Weiss, when he put it so poignantly in Yiddish, Al Yiddish Tzaras zen in Ein Greisa Tzara. All the Tzaras that we have, it's all one big Tzara. It all goes back to the Churban. You want to know why we're a joke at the UN? I mean, they're a joke, but why they treat us that way. Why the UN, why the White House, why Foggy Bottom? It's all because of the Churban. Sometimes we have a hard time relating to a Beis HaMikdash, a Churban, if we've never had a Beis HaMikdash. We all have that challenge. But one of the things we can easily relate to is this difficult state of the Jewish people in the world, which is one of the things that we're mourning with the Churban. The next kina, kina Zion, Echa atzta ba'apecha la'abe biyad adomim emunecha. This is a striking kina, because amazingly, in this kina, we directly confront and challenge the judgment of the Rabbonu Shel Olam. The Rav used to point out, you can find this both in Rabbi Schachter's volume as well as in the kinos book from OU Press. Both of them have the same idea from the Rav. The kina Zion marks a radical break in our traditional approach to churban and to difficulty and to pain. Usually, been on our mind, at least on and off, in the events of this summer. I have no doubt that many of you were familiar through the various social media or internet with the two letters. I think the first one was more well known, but the two letters that Rabbi Shai Schechter sent to his shul, or he's an assistant rabbi at the White Shul in Far Rockaway. He was sent as a shliach of his shul, to their eternal credit. They sent a representative, he was their shliach, to come from New York to Eretz Yisrael for just a few days to pay a shiva call to the three families of the murdered and kidnapped boys. And from the moment he got on the plane to the moment he came back to America, it seems as if every minute, including on the plane, were amazing stories of Hashkacha Pratis, of Kiddush Hashem, of Avas Yisrael. If you haven't yet seen the letters, after the keynotes today, you should Google it. You'll find it, and they're amazing. Less well known than that first letter, as I mentioned, is a second letter. The second letter, for those who haven't seen it, describes Rabbi Schechter's Shabbos that he spent with the family of Gilad Sher in Talmon. 2 days earlier, he was a complete stranger to them. But after the shiva call that he made on Thursday, there was such a kiruv levavos that at 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon, he decided instead of spending Shabbos with his sister in Yerushalayim, he wanted to go to Talmon. And they were more than happy to have him as their guest. And they spent Shabbos together. And before he got on a plane to come back to the United States, he wrote a second letter to his shul describing that Shabbos. Also, that was a Shabbos that was truly Mein Olam Haba. But I want to focus on the last thing in that letter. In that piece, Rav Shai, who I was privileged to spend a lot of time with when we both lived in Baltimore, I'm very, very proud of the young budding Talmud Chacham and leader that he's becoming. So Rav Shai there, before he left, I guess he was asked to share some Divrei Torah Chizuk with the Shar family. And he shared an idea about Kiddush Levana that he heard from his father, Lorena the Great, or Herschel Schechter Shlita, that his father quotes all the time from Rav Soloveitchik. I don't know if this is published. If it is, I didn't see it anywhere else, so someone could let me know if it was independently published. But apparently this is Margi Lebefume of Rav Schechter, who told it to his son, who shared it with the Sher family, and then Kihilas Far Rockaway, and now the world. And the idea is as follows. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Kiddush Levana has to be said standing up, because we're Makbil Pnei Shechina, we're actually, on some level, in the presence of the Rabbonu Shel Olam during Kiddush Levana, and therefore we have to stand. So Rav Soloveitchik asked a very simple question. If it's true, again, let's be honest, we don't all really feel that. So that's a musser for all of us to work on for next month. But if it's really true, and it's a halacha, it's not just a drush, it's not just a nagara, it's really true that we're standing bifnei Hashchina, so you would think it's a tremendous opportunity, such a kirvas elokim. Think of all the things we could daven for, that we could ask for, refuah shalema, gesund, parnasa, shiduchim, world peace, so many different things we could be asking for. And yet, when you review in your mind the text of the Kiddush Levana, there's only one bakasha, only one request in the whole Kiddush Levana ceremony. Anyone remember offhand what that is? Lamalos Pegimas HaLevana. It's bizarre. The moon appears to us most of the month as not full. I never even have thought that's a bad thing, but okay. So apparently it's so bad that in this unique monthly opportunity to commune with the divine, we have one request. Hashem, please, in the coming month, you should complete, you should fill, you should round out this deficiency in the moon. You should take it back to its, quote, original size. Now, what's that an allusion to? That's an allusion to the famous Chazal, the Gemara in Masechta Chulin, Daf Samach, that during the Sheshis Me'abreshis, during the creation, apparently, The moon and the sun were originally the same size and were going to be perceived in the same way by human beings. So the moon, apparently, says the Gemara, say Chazal, challenged Hashem and said, how could it be? We know, Ein Shtei Malachim, B'Sham Shem B'Kasser Echad. It doesn't work in this world. Why should it work in the heavens? You need to have a leader. Two leaders usually means no leader. So how could it be that we're going to be both? These two celestial beings can't be equal. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Gemara, gives no explanation. You might have thought, as we have so often, where Hashem would explain why he did what he did. Or perhaps ignore or criticize the question. But actually, none of those are Hashem's response. The Gemara tells us that immediately without explanation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu diminishes the size of the moon. And that's the result that we perceive throughout history, where the sun is this big, booming, celestial being, which we see at its full size all the time. And the moon waxes and wanes, and most of the month is just a fraction. We see it only as a fraction of its size, and smaller, certainly, than the sun. That's the Gemara. Rekrup Salavechik. Nu, doesn't the moon have a good taina? You don't have to go to Harvard Business School. You don't have to be a veteran of years of the corporate world or the non-for-profit world or any other, or the yeshiva world, to know King Hashem in this moment of intimacy. We want to understand, Rabban Shalom. We trust you, but we don't understand you. And there's a very natural and real and reasonable need that we have as human beings and as Jews, to not only trust, but to want to understand the decisions and the judgments of the Ribono Shel Olam. Tzadik Baralo, what does that mean, Ma'ale Pegimas Alavana? Show us how it makes sense. Bring clarity to what seems to be otherwise confusing. It was a very powerful message that Rav Shai left the Shiva house with. And it's one that we have to think about. And it's one that the Kina, the Bala Kina, puts right in front of our face, right here in Kina Zion. There's so much we don't understand in general, and certainly this summer. How could anyone understand what happened to those three boys? How could anyone understand what happened less than 24 hours ago in Yerushalayim to a young man, a husband of 29 years old, a father, run over by a tractor in the streets of Yerushalayim? This is what we came home for? This is why there's a Hakamas HaMedina? So Hasidim can be run over by tractors in Yerushalayim? We don't understand this. And in this Kina, we ask Hashem, help us. We demand some kind of explanation. Help us understand, because again, one of the aspects of Churban is the confusion and our inability to understand and fathom Hashem's ways. So we ask and we even demand, Hashem, help us understand. Throughout the Kinos, and that is the idea of Imo Anochi Betzara. If you take a look at the source sheet that you should all have, the idea of Imo Anochi Betzara, that means that in some way, as much as we can humanly understand, that Hashem suffers along with Am Yisrael. One of the earliest examples that we have of this is in the well-known Rashi in Chazal. He quotes, when Hashem appears to Moshe first out of the burning bush, Mitoch HaSneh, why the Sneh? Why a burning thorn bush? Rashi says, Lo Ilan Acher, why not some other tree? Why not some other bush? More beautiful, more bakavadik. So Rashi tells us famously, Mishem imo anochi betzara, a brittle, dry, broken bush. That was Hashem's way of saying, I know what Am Yisrael is going through. There are many, many midrashim that developed the idea of imo anochi betzara. And one of the most powerful ones one which I believe has been resonant, particularly since last Friday, is the Yalkut Shimoni in Eicha, source number 2. The Medrash tells us that at the moment of the Churban, Boso Shohaya Kadosh Baruch Hu Boche V'tzoek, Hashem was crying, calling out, Banai Heichanheim, as if he didn't know. But of course, the image is Hashem's bewilderment, the confusion that we feel when we're under stress and in pain. Where did my children go? Where did my Levim go? Where did my chosen ones go? But what can I do? Hashem says, Kama Pamim, I warned them, but they didn't return in tshuva. They didn't do tshuva. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in the underlined part to the Navi, Ma ata roe hayom, when you look at me, he says to the Navi, you look at me mourning now at the moment of the Churban, what image is there? What do you see? Ani dome le'echa shehayu lo bein. I'm like one who had a son. Ba'asa lo chupa. I was making a wedding for him. He was a chatan, a chasan. Umeis betoch chupaso. So close to that moment of simcha. In the chupa, my son died. Ve'ein lecha ke'ev, lo alai lo al banai. You aren't in pain. You don't empathize with my pain, with my children's pain. I don't know of any chatanim that died in the chuppah. But just a few days ago, blew himself up. Who knows who else was there? Maybe there are other terrorists shooting. 3 soldiers killed. 2 chasanim. Hadar Golden Hashem Yimkom Domo. And Benaya Sarel Hashem Yimkom Domo. And the words of the Medrash are so resonant. Ein lecha ke'ev lo alai v'lo al banai. Who could look at these families and not cry? Who could look at the brides, the fiancés? Did you hear? Did you read her hesped, Edna? She was just engaged a few weeks to Hadar. I so wanted to be your bride, she said. I thought you'd never leave me. I thought it would not end so quickly. I have no idea what to do now. Ein lecha ke'ev lo alai v'lo habanai. Because of all the drama surrounding the presumed kidnapping and then identification of Hadar Golden, I'm afraid that the death and the kura and the tragedy of the other chasan perhaps was even overshadowed. There was another gibor, the commanding officer, 26-year-old Ben Torah, Lochem, Benaya, from Kiryat Arba. He wasn't engaged for 2 weeks. He was supposed to be married in 2 weeks. So you all know what that means. The invitations already went out weeks ago. Thanks to the beauty of modern technology, the invitation is available on the internet. Somebody sent it to me. You read it like any other invitation, filled with simcha and hope. Gali and Benaya mitchatnim, Yom Chamishi, Kafei Av, August 21st, Neod Kedumim. Yismach lirotchem. The newspaper headlines of his funeral, which were on Motzei Shabbos in Hebron, said it all. Bimkom chupa halavaya, darko ha'achrona shel ben. How could Hashem's heart not be breaking? Kina Yud Aleph is the oldest and most authoritative kina. Yikonin Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu. And the kina, with its poetic beauty, retells the history and the incredible story of the Melech Yoshiyahu. He was the descendant of Rishayim. He knew nothing, but yet he was the Melech Yisrael. During construction of the Beis HaMikdash, they found the Torah was on the Tochacha, he took it as a sign, he did tshuva, and he created the first Baal Tshuva movement, the first tshuva revolution, which was, I have to say, probably more successful than any tshuva movement since. The first was the most successful, to the point that he was convinced that everyone, without exception in Am Yisrael, were Yireim and Shleimim. He made a mistake. He was wrong. The people weren't as holy as he thought. And he made a decision, a geopolitical decision. It's hard for leaders to make decisions, but he had the benefit of the Navi, and he didn't listen to the Navi. And as a result, he was murdered and died a terrible, terrible death. This kina is not only the oldest and most authoritative, it also is the first, although not the only, kina which does another thing which would seem to be radical, a chiddush. It's the kina that tells us about one person, not the death of thousands or millions, not the destruction of Makom Kadosh, but the death of one person. Why is it that amidst the kinos of so many big and profound losses, we take the time, it's a big kina, it's a complex kina, beautiful kina, to focus on one person? Rav Soloveitchik suggested two different reasons for this. This is found in a number of his writings, and I gave you a brief selection in source number 6. Of one of the places where this is quoted. One reason Rav Soloveitchik gave, it's actually the second one that's on the sheet there, relates to the Rambam lament. But there's a second reason as well. It's actually the first one that Rav Soloveitchik mentions. Just read the first line in source number 6 with you. It's much easier, said the Rav, to touch someone, to move him, if you tell him about a private tragedy that happened to Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so. But if you tell him the story of thousands of people who died in the flood, he cannot respond emotionally. It's impossible to imagine thousands of graves in one's mind. The Rav here is alluding to the Medrash in source number 5 that tells us about Rabbi Akiva, who went to some place called Ganzak, and he gave a drosha there in the shul, all about the catastrophe of the generation of the flood, the Dor HaMabul. However, says the Medrash, V'lo Bachu, didn't move the crowd. Nobody cried. V'kevin shehizkir lemaisa Iyov, miyad Bachu. Iyov had a tragic life, but in the end it was only one person. Millions and millions of people died in the Dor HaMabul. Yet for the Dor HaMabul, no one cried in Rabbi Akiva's shul. But to hear the vivid portrayal in the story of one person, of Iyov, miyad bachu, they cried right away. This is Chazal at their sharpest, in terms of their psychological insights. Chazal are always penetrating in their psychological insight, but this is them at their best. Because how true is this? Nothing has changed. This part of human nature certainly has not changed. When we think about all of the death and destruction, it's overwhelming for us. It's too much, really. But when we think of one person, we hear one story that we can relate to, that can affect us. Of course, the examples over the summer are obvious, but I actually wanted to share with you very quickly a very short story that I recently heard from a few months ago. Although the story took place, and the tragedy took place many years ago, but just after Pesach, or around Pesach time, on the March of the Living. Now there are all sorts of programs for the religious kids and the yeshiva boys and seminary girls. So I don't know, I'm not up on these things, what percentage of our children are going on March of the Living nowadays. But certainly still there are thousands of Jews going on these programs, the particular program, the March of the Living. And from its inception, I think it's about 2 months ago, you can find it on YouTube. And in the context of a brief speech, Yisroel Meir Lau told the following story of a friend of his who was a survivor of the Holocaust who moved to California. This man had already been married with a family before the war, but his wife and his kids were killed in the camps, but he survived. He came to the United States. He remarried, he has a new family, and according to Rabbi Lau, is a very successful builder, fabulously wealthy. Yet despite for all of his material success, said Rabbi Lau, anyone who sees him is immediately struck by how sickly he looks. He has no smile, his eyes look extinguished. A friend asked him once, I don't know if it was Rabbi Lau or another friend, are you sick? Is there something wrong? Is there something wrong with your health? And the man responded that he's perfectly in good health as far as he or the doctors know. But he understood the question. And after a moment to collect himself, he explained his physical appearance. You know me now, you know my current family, but you don't know my previous family. I had a daughter, Mirila, who was 12 when she died from starvation in my arms. My wife now loves me very much, he said. She knows what I love to eat. So every day I come home from work, and she has prepared the most lavish dinners and unbelievable meals with my favorite foods, set on a beautiful table with the finest silverware and china. And every day the same thing happens. I sit down to eat. I lift a fork or a spoon to my mouth. And right before I can taste my wife's delicious food, my Mirila appears to me. Only skin and bones. And she says to me, Tata, a bissel of broida. Daddy, a little bread, a little bread. Tata, a bissel of broida. After that, I shove away my plate and can't eat a thing. Sixty years later. Yekonin Yermio al Yoshio, Echa Holi, Eis Kishahadi Maholi, the Mosi Kiladio Alili, Rashadi, even Asati, even Utah, Shali. Kino Yud Gimel. Eiko Omer Koreis La'av B'Petzach. This kina is stylistically focused on the word ko, which the Balakina shows us is used in many different contexts. And if you look at all the various times where the word ko is mentioned, again, this is Kina Yud Gimel, the pattern, the theme seems to be Hashkacha Pratis and divine blessing. So we say, Eiko, where is that Hashkacha Pratis? Where is that Bracha? Omer Kores La'av Befetzach. So we mention the proclamation you made to Avraham, to the Bris Ben of Asarim. Then another stanza, the promise that's made to Avraham in reference to Akedas Yitzchak, that Zechus. If you look at the paragraph a little bit lower, the letter Zion, we reference the Zechus of Moshe Rabbeinu, V'yifen ko v'cho, Moshe Rabbeinu stood up for his people. Throughout the Kina, we have all these examples where Ko refers to Hashkacha Pratis, or Great Bracha, pivotal moments, successful, happy moments in Jewish history. And yet, in each and every stanza, that is contrasted with Hein Ata. We went from the Eiko, this tremendous Zechus, Hashkacha, Bracha, but the Hein Ata. But now, Bulu Atzamai Beretzach, my bones are swallowed up, murdered. And as a result, Lama Elokim Zanachta Lanetzach. Hashem, you've abandoned us. Right? Or the next stanza. Ein Ata Dakru Kefelech Rayasecha. Now we are like fruit with a spear in it. Yeshan Abcha Betzon Marisecha. Again, your anger, your smoldering anger against your sheep, etc., etc. The sense you get from this kina is one of confusion and bewilderment. What happened? Good, so exciting, there was so much love, so much passion, and over the years, you don't know where it went. V'hein ata. Where did those brachos go? Where did that happiness go? I look at the wedding picture, I see that smiling person, but who is that? I don't recognize myself. I don't recognize that smile. It's a very, very painful, but unfortunately not infrequent phenomenon. That's a, I believe, an apt mashal for what the kina is trying to describe. The echo, the intensity, the closeness, the happiness, and now the confusion, the heinata, look what happened. I want to focus, those of you who have the art scroll, on page 194, but if you're looking just in a different version, if you look at the alphabetical, if you look at the stanza that begins, Eiko Krisos Chadoshos, second line is Bacho Amar, but then you have the Lamed Luhaku. So what do we say in that stanza? Eiko Krisos Chadoshos Brisos. What are we asking about? The letter, the word ko, but in what's the context here? When new blood covenants are sealed, a bris of dam, consecration of a covenant between Am Yisrael and Hashem through dam. And where is that referenced? The ko amar, kechatzos laila. So what's Kechasos Laila? What's the blood covenant, the Dam Bris that's being alluded to? Yetzias Mitzrayim, namely, the Karban Pesach. So why is it in the plural? Why is it Brisos? Why is it two Brisos? What is it referring to? What's the second one? Of course, Bris Mila. What's the connection between Bris Mila and Karban Pesach? Because the halacha is that you can't eat from the Karban Pesach if you're not circumcised. And with according to Chazal, with the exception of Shevet Levi, the Jews had neglected Bris Mila throughout their time in Mitzrayim. And therefore, before they could have the Dam Bris of the Karban Pesach, they first needed the Dam Bris of Mila. So what a tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. All these adult men circumcising themselves, taking the God of the Egyptians, wiping the blood on the doorpost. What happened to that Zchus of that Ko? What happened to the love and the trust that clearly must have existed at that point for the Jewish people to be willing to do that? What happened to that ko? Hein Ata. But I was thinking of the events of the last few weeks, comes from a family very different than ours, very far removed from active religious experience. But Baruch Hashem, he went on a birthright trip. In 10 days, in Eretz Yisrael caused him to change his life, leave Los Angeles, and join the army. There was so much attention given to him, somewhat overshadowed, at least for Americans, I think, the story of Sean, or as he was known also, Nisim Karmeli. A little bit of a different background, although he was also a Chayal Bodeid. His parents were Israeli, but they live in one of those islands off of Texas where people work in the oil business. But he, as his two sisters, chose to leave the United States and come back to live in Eretz Yisrael, and he also joined the army. Wouldn't you say that those decisions that those two boys made was a bris chadash? A new covenant with Ribono Shel Olam, with Am Yisrael, with Eretz Yisrael. In Sean's case in particular, again, I don't know the details on it, I don't want him to speak, it certainly seems like he was significantly, if not completely, Chozer B'tshuva, on some level at least, certainly widely displayed picture with him and his Chabad rabbi. It wasn't the first time they met either. But Max also clearly, the Mesiras Nefesh for Am Yisrael, for Eretz Yisrael. But you know what was more moving to me, in a way, more impressive, more inspiring, than the Krisos Brisos Chadoshos that Max and Sean made? What about the new bris that Am Yisrael made at the funeral of those two boys, respectively? 20,000 and then 30,000 people. Presidents and prime ministers don't get that many people. Certainly out of Israel. 20,000 people, 30,000 people. You think there was even 100 at either funeral who knew those soldiers personally? I don't think there was 100. I don't even know if there was 50. Out of 20,000 people, out of 30,000 people. To me, maybe it'll sound funny to you, but I mean this very seriously, one of the most amazing Kiddush Hashem, one of the most amazing stories of this whole summer is the story of Maccabi Haifa soccer team. I actually wrote this, but Yesh Kona Olamo V'Sha'achas. Somebody wrote the following words. If you haven't seen this, listen carefully. This is one of the most amazing things you'll ever hear. Akasha anakit meitanu elechem ohavei Maccabi Haifa. We're asking our fans, we really, it's a serious request. V'zuha hazdamnut shalachem la'asot mitzvah gedola. Did you know Maccabi Haifa spoke that way? Mitzvah gedola, the soccer team asks for. Sean Carmeli, shenerag emesh, hayachayal bodeid. We don't want it to be empty. Hayom be'erev titkayem ha'alvaya shelo be'beit ha'almin tzvai b'shchunat Neve David b'chaifa b'shat 2300. Bo'o l'teit kavod achron l'gibor shenerag k'dei she'anachnu nuchal l'chiyot. Let's give the kavod achron to this hero, this warrior, who made the ultimate sacrifice so that we can live. Ze hama'at shenuchal la'asot avuro va'avur ha'am shelanu. I ask you, what a people, what a country. Is there another people that would have such a thing? Is there another country where such a thing could have happened, let alone has ever happened? 20,000 strangers mainly come because a soccer team asked them to on their Facebook page and with Twitter in a few hours. I don't know who wrote this exactly, and I don't know all the players. Okay, I don't know any of the players. The fact that I call it soccer is probably a proof to that. But I have no doubt. Yesh kona alama b'sha'achas, ner tzadikim. And that was one of the most amazing Kiddush Hashems I have ever seen and that we will ever see. A sports team, Maccabi Haifa. It was one of the most profoundly Jewish things that can be done. And I say that because of an insight of the Baal HaTurim. This is something you will never forget, so listen carefully. One, start with the second one. How did she know it was a Jewish baby? She could see the Bris Milah. So the simple answer is because who else would be floating down the river? Okay, maybe that's the right answer, but still I think a reasonable question. But the second question is the more basic pshat question, which all the mafarshim are bothered by, which there seems to be a contradiction in the pasuk. How old was this person that she was looking at? In the Tanakh, in biblical Hebrew, a nar and a yelid are not synonyms. Exactly how old a nar is, halachically, in parshanut, it's certainly older than a yelid. So if she saw the nar, excuse me, if she saw the yelid, how come she heard the nar bocha? This is a classical question. And various mafarshim give different answers to the question. Take a look at the Baal HaTurim, source number 8. And with one fell swoop, he answers both questions. Says the Baal HaTurim, Vihine nar bocha, Ze Aaron. Moshe's older brother was a nar. He was a yelid. She saw the yelid. She saw Moshe floating down the river. Hine na'ar bocha. It was Aaron. We always hear about Miriam watching the baby. Says the Baal HaTurim, tremendous chiddush. Moshe is watching. Excuse me, Aaron is watching. And it's Aaron who was crying. How does he know this? Where does he get it from? So if you're familiar with the Baal HaTurim, you know he is the king of gematrias. There's no Chassidus Rebbe who could do gematrias like the Baal HaTurim. And the Baal HaTurim says, Na'ar Boche, Begematria, Ze Aaron HaKohen. Now I have a confession. I didn't do the math because I don't want to find out it's not true. Or maybe it is, but I'm not willing to take a chance. The port's too good. Ze Aaron HaKohen, that's Gematria Na'ar Boche. So Aaron is the one crying. So first of all, let's answer our questions now. Let's go back. The pshat question is beautifully answered. The tiftach v'tireu es hayeled, a baby, that's Moshe. Ihine Na'ar Boche. And Aaron is crying there in the on the side of the river. But the punchline, what's the greatness of this Baal HaTurim? It's how he answers, implicitly, how he answers the second question. Go now to Kina Tes Zion, 16. Zochor asher aso tsar bifinim. Remember what the tsar, the tormentor, did when he was inside, when he was penetrating the inside of the Beis HaMikdash. The tsar here refers to Titus HaRasha, General Titus. The Gemara in Gittin and Daf Nun Vav on the Beis, as well as other sources of the Strabinason and the Skina in particular, give painful and detailed and vivid description to the unique cruelty and the unique arrogance and the bloodlust. The bloodlust, which unfortunately now we're too familiar with, of our great arch enemy here, Titus HaRasha. Akina gives numerous examples, painful examples, of terrible things that he did to Am Yisrael. We know the story of when he took the sword into the paroches, other such examples. That's right in the second stanza with the bays. Gider paroches balashte panim. A harlot in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and nothing happened. A few stanzas below that, the one that begins with Bachurim, we have the line Zekenim Nivasu Ki Hirshuhu Mizchakim. The elders, the tzaddikim, the tamechamim, they were panicked. Nivasu, they were panicked when they understood that Titus was given a free rein. It was Hirshuhu, he had permission. Shust was given to the mashkis. Once they realized that, there was nothing but panic. He could do asos ritzono, whatever he pleased. Hu asur bazikim. It could be shackled, of course, and worse. Turn the page a few paragraphs later. Ata katsafta v'hershesa lefanos. Hashem, you allowed them to empty Yerushalayim, to empty the Beis HaMikdash of its contents. You know, the Romans took many of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. And what's even more priceless than the Klei HaMikdash? The next line. Yiladim asher ein behem kol me'um misham lahafnos. Took away, they kidnapped children. Bring back our boys, bring back our girls. Perhaps if there had been hashtags in the time of Bayis Sheni, maybe something could have happened. I'm joking, obviously. Yeladim asherim behem kol me'um. Children are taken. Shilchum ve'eretz utz b'shalosh svinos. This is the terrifying story which we have in Chazal in greater detail in the Gemara, as well as in the Medrash and Eicha Rabbah. If you take a look at source number 9, you have a more detailed and less poetic description of this frightening event. The Medrash tells us, Apos Yonos Malei Gimel Sfinos Migdola Yerushalayim Lohoshivon Bekalon Shel Romi. They were kidnapped, but not to be physically tortured or not to be killed, but rather, as you have in somewhat of the slave trade even nowadays, to be degraded morally. And apparently these children understood that. And they said to each other, these little kids, Amru, lanoshim evakshos osun lakach. Amru lehem lav. So the boys asked the girls, are you willing to do this? They certainly said the boys, v'schus nashim tzikanios, we must be inspired by our fellow sisters, we certainly can't go through with this. So they decided they only had one choice. They could jump into the sea. But then they hesitated. Not because they were afraid to die, but because they were afraid maybe it's not the right thing to do. Tomru, they asked the question, Im mashlichim anu atzmenu liyam, anu bayim l'chay olam haba? If we commit mass suicide, if we jump into the sea to avoid the degradation of Rome, will we still merit Olam Haba? Sometimes we call out to Hashem, but he doesn't always answer us, at least not that we can hear. But says the Medrash, Miyad Heira Kadosh Baruch Hu Eseinehim, whether they heard a voice or they had inspiration, but either way they understood it was a divine message from the Pasuk in Tehillim, one that the Kina will refer to. Amar Hashem Mibashan Ashiv, Ashiv Mitzulos Yam. Hashem can retrieve us when the time comes for Tchias HaMesim, for Olam Haba, even from the depths of the sea. Mibashan Ashiv, Ibn Shine Arayos Ashiv. A body is ripped to shreds, killed in a violent way. Hashem can put it back together during Tchias HaMesim, don't you worry. Mimitzulos Yam, the depths of the sea. Kimashmo, don't you worry, Hashem can find that body too. There's no one who's lost that sea to the Rabbonu Shel Olam. Once they understood that they would nevertheless merit Olam Haba, Tchias HaMesim, despite this act, Amdakat Rishona V'Amra, Pasuk, and they jumped, Amdakat Shlishit, Shenit, etc. Hishlichu Atzman Liyam, Ruach HaKodesh, Sovachas V'Omeres, Al Eile Ani Bochia. Here, according to the Medrash, Hashem appropriates the words of the Navi and cries, Hashem himself, as we saw before, Imo Nohi Batsara. Hashem cries for these children. And this is the last stanza. If you look back into the Kina, Ki Tohomos Ba'u Ad Nafsham, Kozos Basnu Velo Shachnucha, we didn't forget you. Tekvasam Nosnu Lemeshiv Mibashan, they wanted to be brought back. Tchias HaMesim, Olam Haba, Ubaskol Nishma Uru Lama Tishan. There's so much that could be said about this Kina and its relevance. I'd like to offer a little bit of a drush on this story. Jumping, and it was literal Mesiras Nefesh. They jumped into the cold and stormy waters and died a watery death just to avoid degradation and thereby creating a Kiddush Hashem. But I think on a deeper level, we're witnessing similar behavior in countless examples of our youth now, today, also jumping to Kiddush Hashem, jumping to Mesiras Nefesh, volunteering as a Chayal Bodeid, leaving family, the United States, safety and security, to put themselves on the front line. Children who grew up in Eretz Yisrael but are taught with our values, jumping to learn extra, jumping to the most demanding units in the army, transforming it, some of the units in particular, Givati and others, you know better than me probably, the percentage of yarmulkes is increasing every year. Our children are jumping for Kiddush Hashem. They're taking the initiative for Mesiras Nefesh. And this jumped out at me, no pun intended, so clearly, just in the last few days, when I thought of and when I read and I heard, as I'm sure so many of you did, the interview that took place a year ago on Arut Sheva with the Golden Twins, with Hadar and his twin brother. Did you hear that or did you read it? Unbelievable. I'll just read you one or two of the lines. We'll go back between the Hebrew and the English. Of course, the interview was in Hebrew. The interviewer was, and they asked them about their decisions and their choices, and had they go to the Mechina and Eli, and had they decided to join the combat units, and why they decided to go to the Course Katsinim. And Hadar answered, and he said, "You are raised to understand that in life, you can choose between being involved with yourself and being involved with great things." Kol achad tzarich ledat lehitmaser v'latet. This is a young boy, early 20s. We understand, everyone needs to understand, he said, the need to give, the need to serve. He was being pushed a little bit by the interviewer. Does everyone have to go to the army? Does everyone have to be in a combat unit? And he actually said, no, it's not so much exactly how you do it, but it's a position, Yoter Ba'amdat Nefesh. It's a perspective, it's an attitude. As he's put it, everyone has to be prepared to carry the stretcher together, Yachad. If we realize we all have an achrayas that we're in it together, as he said, Mesirut, Ahavad Ha'am, Shlichut, Hakrava, service, sacrifice, commitment to people, commitment to country. Did he not jump to Kiddush Hashem in his life? We too often think of Kiddush Hashem in death, but often, as in the case here of Hadar Golden, he lived a life of Kiddush Hashem well before he died al Kiddush Hashem. I assume all of you heard or read his father's hesped. And it's a phenomenon, I don't just mean parents being maspid children, lo aleinu, but the phenomenon of parents speaking not only as loving parents, as any parent would be, but I get the sense it's very genuine, not only in his case, but there were a number of others where the parents were genuinely in awe of their children, genuinely admired their children, and genuinely believed that they and all of us could learn from their children. This is not a given, even in the most loving and wonderful families. These are unique hespedim, some of the ones that we've heard. Even the little things. In his community, to be so committed his whole life, even as a teenager, never to curse, not to allow any of his chanichim and Bnei Akiva to curse, not to allow his soldiers to curse. What a Kiddush Hashem. Who made him do it? Nobody. He jumped into Kiddush Hashem. He asked his mom, what a story, so that he could sew onto the belt that held his gun the two words, Oz Va'anava. Where do 20-plus-year-old kids get this from? I'm sure we all read and saw the letter that was written before the war by Ofer Winter. I've had the schus to meet him a few times. He's now the head commander of the entire Givati with the yarmulke. He's a boger of the first machzor of Eli. I met him when he was still lower down on the army. He was only, quote-unquote, the head of Dov Davan when I met him the first time, or the second time. But everyone knew then he was a rising star in the army and a walking Kiddush Hashem. He has now written the letter heard around the world. The letter he wrote to his soldiers, to Givati, filled with emunah, with kedusha, with privilege, with service, exactly the type of things that his soldiers. At first, I would look at these kids and a lot of times I would see myself. I also used to have a little bit more hair. Same kippah, more or less. I also used to like to run around and do all sorts of extracurriculars, although I guess in America, Friday Tulim is not what you do, but the American version of that. I didn't just like to sit and learn all day. I like to run around too. I saw a lot of myself in some of these kids. But the more I think about it, the more I thought about it, the more I learned about them, I came to a very painful but obvious conclusion. I'm not even close. I was nothing close to these kids. I was a good kid. Baruch Hashem, I came from a great family with great, amazing parents. They should live and be well. Great values in my family, serious, good family, but not this. I didn't grow up like this. You would have talked to me at 18, at 20, at 21. I did not sound like these boys, not even close, not any of them. This is Chinuch Eretz Yisrael. There's a difference. I don't just mean in the ability to read Rashi or Hebrew. That's a separate point. But there's something called chinuch Eretz Yisrael. The chinuch for service, chinuch for am, chinuch for sacrifice. Everything that that boy spoke about, that Hadar spoke about, he personified it, but he's not the only one. When I was speaking with Rav Lichtenstein 5 years ago about my decision whether or not to make Aliyah and what I would do here, I did make Aliyah. He didn't have the best answer, and I don't really have a good answer yet, but I'm working on it. But one of the things that Rav Lichtenstein brought up, we're sitting right in the front of Har Etzion Beis Medrash, in his seat. He should live and be well with good health, to be Marbitz Torah, and lead us for many years to come. This is one of the points that he made to me 5 years ago. He said there are certain advantages to the chinuch in America. Now's not the time to get into those details, but he said there are advantages. But there is one huge advantage of chinuch Eretz Yisrael, as he called it. And again, he wasn't just referring to the kiyus and the reading ability. I wasn't anything close to these kids. The pain, it's tremendous pain to lose such amazing children, amazing young adults. But I want to leave you, before we go to the kina itself, with one last point, which is that it's also a machayev. It obligates us. If we lost kids like this, then we and our children and our grandchildren have to pick up the slack. We have to have that amdat nefesh for hakrava, for shlichut, for mesirut, all the things that those boys spoke about in that interview, to carry the stretcher. Many of us have benefited over the years, maybe in America and now in Yerushalayim, from Rabbi Beryl Wine. He should also live and be well for many years. How did Rabbi Wine get into chinuch? How did he get into Rabbanus? He was a lawyer. Why did he choose to dedicate his life to service? He tells the story. It took a while till it happened, but it goes back to his youth. 1946, he was a young boy in Chicago. And in Skokie Yeshiva, then known, still known as Hebrew Theological College, they had a visit from the Goyin HaTzadik, the Rav HaRoshi, Rav Herzog Zatzal. And after a 45-minute shiur in Yiddish, he then spoke in his beautiful Queen's English and told them the following story. A few months earlier, he had gone to meet the Pope for one purpose, to beg the Pope for his help returning the thousands of Jewish children that had been given over to Christian families before the war, to give them back to the Jewish community. The Pope had no interest in helping. They had all been baptized, he said. It was usur for them to be returned. The person who was with Rav Herzog at the time said that in all his time he'd never seen Herzog looked so defeated and so disgusted. When he came out from the meeting, he said, "Take me to a mikvah. This is not a maisla, this is history." And then, said Rabbi Wein, Herzog defiantly raised his head and looked at me and all the other young boys who were gathered in the Beis Medrash that morning. And he said, "I cannot save those thousands of children, but I ask of you, what are you going to do to rebuild the Jewish people?" Every child who went by at the end of the event just to say Shalom Aleichem to the Rav, every one of them, said Rabbi Wein, he looked at them, he said, "Did you understand what I said? Don't forget it. What are you going to do to rebuild the Jewish people?" We've lost so many amazing, talented, dedicated, idealistic young men over the last 7 weeks. And I believe it behooves each and every one of us to ask ourselves that question. Chilul Hashem means chalal. Chalal means a gap, empty space. There's a chalal now, there's a chilul Hashem. There's a lot of Kedusha that has been lost in the world. It's our achrayus. We all have to ask ourselves, what are we going to do to replace all that has been lost? Our children who have metaphorically jumped also into that yam and died al Kiddush Hashem. דחלת אינו ואוס בזונה ולא נוחה אפילו עמה בשון תקווה סום נסנו למשי מבשון ובאס כל נשמע אורו לא מתישון. The next kina is kina Yud Zayin. It's one of the more graphic and painful, shocking really, of all of the kinos. Im tochalna nashim piryam The Kina opens with the quote from Echa Perek Beis, and then as well in the next line, Im tevashelna nashim rachmaniyot yeladim, that's from Echa Perek Dalet. It's based on a piece in Chazal. You look briefly at source number 10 on your sheet. The Gemara tells one story, although there's no reason to think so enough in the Kina that this only happened once, although once would be more than enough, one time too many, but I doubt it was only once. The Gemara tells us about something even worse. What could be worse than a mother eating or cooking her child? The Gemara talks about a certain child, Doeg ben Yosef, apparently a very wealthy family, and she loved her child so much, says the Gemara, that every day she would bring gifts to the Beis HaMikdash in gold, I guess, in the weight of the child to show how much she loved her child. But what happened? Kshagavar Oyev, when the enemy became too much, she was so starving, so filled with hunger. What does the Gemara say in the next two words? The next word in particular? According to the Gemara, at least in this story, she killed her child. She was tabach, she shechted the child. Then she was mevashel. Then she was ochel. So what could be worse than a mother cooking and eating her child? Only one thing. First, with her own hands, killing her child. And this is what the Gemara said. But I want to focus on the other theme, which is, of course, the theme of a Jewish mother. What is so shocking about this kina, I would say, is not just the hunger or even the cannibalism, which is still shocking, but obviously what really gets us and what's really shocking is that we're talking about a mother. And not just any mother, but a Yiddish mama, a Jewish mother. We know what a Jewish mother is. A Jewish mother is not Tochalna Nashim Piryam, Tavashelna Nashim Rachmaniyot. They're Rachmaniyot. They're kind, they're merciful, they're loving. It's incomprehensible, unimaginable, that of all people, a mother, a Jewish mother, our enemies have mothers. This would be believable about them. They raised their children to die, to kill. It's not a huge leap once you've raised your child from birth to die and kill to do this. You know, one of the biggest celebrities in the Arab world is the Nidal. You familiar with her? That's her name. She was even, I think, at one point a member of the Palestinian parliament. I don't know if she still is. I think she had five boys, I think. Three of them already were suicide bombers. And she was therefore given this title of honor, apparently. She's the mother of the Nidal of this. There's a sickening interview, which you can get on the internet if you're interested, for great pride, and their death wallows and proud of their blood. But that's not a Jewish mother. The furthest thing from it. One of the striking things about this summer, and I don't know how to explain it other than it must be obviously b'hashkacha, is the prominent role of mothers. I don't actually have any personal connection or relationship with any of the families, starting with the three boys or any of the soldiers who have been touched so painfully this summer. So I certainly don't know about their personalities prior, the relationships between the dynamics between the families or the husbands and the wives. But I assume, like me, you've been struck that for whatever reason, particularly with the three boys who were kidnapped, but it's not only been them, whatever the reason is, it's been the mothers who've been the public face of the families and of the tragedies. This has been the summer of the Jewish mother in all of her splendor. And I want to make two particular points about the amazing mothers. Not just Racheli Frankel, although she deserves tremendous mention, and we will get back to her. One is how they dealt with things publicly. Often, I know in my experience in the rabbinate, as different as it was from the type of tragedies we're dealing with here, but you often see, and you don't have to be a rabbi to see it, although I did, there's often, or maybe always, a private side to the mourning challenge for them because the public crowds out the private. Everyone wants a piece of them, wants part of their story. We want it. We want to be inspired by it. We think we're helping. Most of the time we are, maybe not always. And we sometimes forget and can kind of suffocate them or crowd them out from their own private mourning. Before they were symbols, they were just mothers and wives and people. A few years ago, there's so much now we can forget how horrible the past has been. But if you remember the Fogel tragedy, you say, who can forget? But we have forgotten, haven't we? The Fogel tragedy. So at their funeral, the brother of the father of Udi, his brother Mati, spoke. One of the things that he said at that funeral so touched me. He said, Udi, it's hard for me to see all these people. It's hard for me, thousands of people at the funeral. Why was that hard? It was such a kavod, such a feeling of Am Yisrael. But he said, no, it was hard. Because everyone's coming and everyone's talking about you as a symbol and not as a person. You're not a symbol, he said, of the land of Israel. You're not a symbol. You're not a symbol of Hityashvut. You're not a symbol of Kama Medina. You're not a symbol. All of those are attempts, he said, to forget the simple fact that is riddled with pain. You're dead. And no symbol will bring you back. More than anything, this funeral, he said, must be a private event. That sense of privacy, of just humanity, we saw in some of the words of the mothers of the three boys. Even as they were in public, they spoke in very private and personal ways. If you remember some of those press conferences that they had in Israel, the video of them speaking in Geneva for that UN group was very personal, very basic. There's no question in my mind that part of the reason, not the only, maybe not even the main, but a real part of the reason why their story captured the nation and the world was because of the way the mothers handled themselves. And in particular, not only the grace and the dignity and the faith, but when they spoke hand in hand with all that dignity and grace and faith, just being loving, simple mothers came across. Check the video of when they spoke in Geneva. They implored those leaders, if you can call them leaders, to let teenagers just come home and be with their families. They spoke about them as private people. Siblings wanting to play, parents wanting to hug. But at the same time, more than any I've ever witnessed or ever read about, or let alone witnessed, the way these three families, in particular Racheli Frankel, the way they handled themselves, the way they spoke, was a past week. What did Racheli Frankel say in the Great Synagogue? Askara liyeled bi'itsuma shel milchama. She wasn't, as it would totally be her right, exclusively focusing on her loss, her child. There was no tunnel vision. She wasn't myopic, which would have been normal, would have been expected. She put it in context of the milchama. And then she said words which I am convinced will go down in history. They will not be forgotten for centuries. Harega hachi prati bezman hachi klal Yisraeli. B'yamim ka'ela ha'prati hu klali va'klali hu prati. Shizurim ze baze li yechodat lahafrid. The moment that's most personal, she said, at a time that's most national. And these days, the personal is national, and the national is personal. They're all interwoven. They cannot be separated. She had a wish, she said. Anachnu vakshim lachlok et achibuk ha'atzum shekibalnu im mishpachot ha'chayelim ha'harugim tzuei tzahal. Just the willingness to see that positive, which she did from the beginning. To be so thankful and appreciative of that hug that Klal Yisrael has given her family. But she doesn't want to keep it for herself. She's not interested in wallowing it. She's not interested in keeping it as much as I'm sure she needs it. She wants to share it with everyone else who needs it as well. The mishpachot of the chayalim. I tell you this as plainly as I can. This is not normal. You will not see this perhaps ever again. This is not Derech HaTeva. This is Lamala Min HaTeva. And there was a second aspect as well. Despite it all, the optimism throughout the 18 days, and even the positive tone that she and the other families have taken since their sons were found killed. I want you to take a look at an unbelievable piece from the Eish Kodesh, source number 11. The Holy Piazetzner, as I'm sure you all know, was the last Hasidic Rav in the Warsaw Ghetto. Where he had been, the Rav was a little shtetl outside of Warsaw, but the Nazis gathered everyone into the big city, so he was in the Warsaw Ghetto. And now is not the time to go into the history. I'm sure many of you know it, but even for those who don't, forgive me another time. The book itself, Eish Kodesh, is a miracle of our day, that we have the book, how it was written. The drushos in the last 3 years of the ghetto, from the Rebbe to those Hasidim or those who were listening to him in the ghetto. So on Amud Yud, page 10 of the Sefer Eish Kodesh, he talks about Yisurim. This is on Parshas Chayei Sara. He quotes a vort from Menachem Mendel of Rimenov. The Gemara compares two types of covenants, of britot. Melach, we know we use salt on the Mizbeach for a carbon, and also the brit of Yisurim, of tragedy, of trial, of tribulation. And the Gemara compares the two and speaks about how just as salt perfects, helps the meat, that so too, as painful as it is, Yisurin have a way of ennobling. I think we know this in our own lives and certainly our national lives. As painful as they are, we can come, with Hashem's help, we can come out of the other side of Yisurin better than we were before them. They can ennoble us. The Gemara makes that point. As Rav Menachem Mendel of Rimenov, where it's underlined on line 3, so too, he says, out the Rashi in Chayei Sara, the opening Rashi we've all known since our youth. Lama nisbacha misa Sara la kedis Yitzchak? Because when Sara heard about what happened, parcha nishmasa umesa. She heard about the almost, the near miss. Her son didn't die, but he almost did. And even that grief was too much. It's just a Rashi. We don't appreciate that Rashi, but we have to think about what that Rashi means. Says the Eish Kodesh, this is unbelievable. What is this for? is to tell us, I think there may be a typo there, you'll forgive me. That there's such a thing as Yoser Midai. There can be too much. Im Nasa Kain Basara, if Sara the Tzadeka, Sara Imenu, couldn't handle too much Yisurim, Sara who's Shnei Chaye, Sara Kulan Shavin Latova, and nevertheless, Lo Yachla Lisbo Yisurim Kashim, Kol Shekain Anachnu. Who's the Anachnu? Him, his Chasidim, you and me. Kol Shekain Anachnu. We can't handle it. We can't handle so many Yisurim. Va'afilu mi shebechemlas Hashem nishar chai. Even someone who has a near miss, who maybe is injured but isn't killed, doesn't die. Nevertheless, gam achar Yisurov mikomakom chelke kocho umocho verucho nishbaru. But nevdu menu. This is derech hateva. This is typical. Even someone who survives a near miss, a terrorist attack, battle, a disease, parnasa problems, but often, even if they survive, their koach, their moach, their ruach, it's not the same afterwards. They're a little bit more defeated, a little bit more humbled, a little bit less confident, a little bit less spring in their step, a little bit more depressed. Mali katla kula, mali katla palga, he says. And if it's a little bit or it's all of it, it's too much. Too much. This is normal. This is even a Sara Imenu. Says Esh Kodesh, this is why Sara died, he said. To be a Melitz Yosher, in the most literal sense we can understand that concept. So that Hashem should know he can't give us too much. There's a Gvul which even Sara couldn't handle. And yet, there seems to be no Gvul that these mothers can't handle. Hard to pick out, there's so much. You saw the video, or you read, about the, in the middle of it all, she tells these children that I believe that they're going to return, she says. I'm sure of it, she says. B'mehera. But one thing for sure, she says, Hashem lo oved etzlenu. She tells these little kids, Hashem does not work for us. Shelo tishabru chas v'chalila im yikre mashu acher. I believe they're going to come back, she said, but if they don't, if chas v'chalila something else happens, don't be broken. And she encouraged them to stay strong and to stay b'yachad. Who has the presence of mind to think this way when their son is missing and kidnapped by Hamas terrorists? Who has the presence of mind to think this way when they just have a paper cut? And I repeat, this is not normal. This is Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Grona. And or the Leviah of their son, they had never been to Israel. And his father said, I want to answer the question I know you all want to ask. No, he said, knowing what I know now, I have no regrets about the choices my son made. No regrets, really? Would you have no regrets? I would have a ton of regret. And that's with my background, let alone with his. He really has no regrets. I believe him. But this is not normal. This is amazing. This is shelo kederech hateva. These are the type of parents that we have. These are the type of parents we've always had. These are the type of mothers and fathers that we're proud of. And because apparently something was so, so wrong and so different, this is what we lament in this kina. Im tochalna nashim piryam alai tipuchim alalai. Im tavashal nashan rachman yaladi mamaduni im tavachim tavachim alalai li im tigos na pasrasham ותקשם אל הסוסים פורחים על הביילים תדבק לשון יונק לחר בצמאון שכיחים על הביילים תואמן עזו למעזו בואי ונמשל אז בנינו צורחים על הביילים תיבד נעזו לזו תני בניהם וחבוי מנותח נתחים על הביילים In to the end of the world, in the name of the Lord, in Tanos no lamase falshmonim elef konim brachim alevi im tisaraf no shem falosan nefashos kikotzim kisuchim alevi im tisaraf no adam naki shmonim elef konim mishuchim alevi im tifach nefashos medukarim meireach tinuvos yichim alevi im titzaver no aleven achas Isha kabin moche yeladim menachim olalim tukan ashkosh mechim אם תוכל אנשים פריאה משמים, אם ירא במקדש אדם הכהן ונביא, ולא משמים. I'd like to go back now for a moment and look at Moshe Kina, which we skipped, but I want to go back to it now. Kina Yud, the 10th Kina. We'll go back to Kina Yud, Echa Yashva, Chabatzelas HaSharon. We're going to see that in juxtaposition with, and right after that we'll do Kina Chav Aleph, the Arzei HaLevanon. But first, let's go back to Kina Yud. The Kina Echa Yashva, Chabatzelas HaSharon is a reference to the Kohanim. Chabatzelas HaSharon. And it's a list, the whole structure of this Kina, of Kina Yud, was of the various places where the Kohanim lived. Right? They were only in the Beis Hamikdash a week or two a year, each family, each group, but they were Mishmaros, that they had been set up, 24 Mishmaros Kohuna, that David and Shmuel Hanavi had set up. And in each of the stanzas and the Kinos, we have the different names of the different places where they lived. Maron, Tziporim, Mifshata. If you look a little bit later in the Kino, we even have Yudpas. That was where Josephus was from. Still a city in the Galil, Yudpas. Ailhu, Kfar Uziel, Arabel, of course we recognize. The entire Kina here is about the Kohanim. Question is, why a Kina about the Kohanim in particular? We discussed already the issue, the focused the importance of a kina on the individual. But I think here perhaps there's a different message. Many years ago I heard a shiur from Rabbi Yisrael Reisman of Tarvadas, and of the, I believe his Navi shiur in Motzei Shabbos is the single biggest shiur in terms of live attendance anywhere in the world, let alone the satellite people watching it. I think there's 1,000 people on it in Motzei Shabbos that come to hear him at Flatbush every week. Tremendous Talmud Chacham, a kind person. He's not only a Talmud Chacham, he's normal. It's a double compliment in our generation. An opportunity to meet him once or twice. I brought a group from my shul to meet him once. He was very, very generous and gracious with his time. Tremendous speaker, a darshan, Talmud Chacham. And as he mentions invariably, perhaps in every shiur, the close Talmud of Rav Pam Zatzal. He always talks about my Rebbe Rav Pam, my Rebbe Rav Pam. Just that alone is sometimes musar enough reason to hear his shiurim. He has plenty of wonderful content too. Just to hear the way he speaks about his Rebbe Rav Pam, who I had other people I know who are also close to Rav Pam, tremendous, tremendous tzaddik. So Rav Reisman, once speaking on Tisha B'Av, addressed the need for this kina. Why do we have a kina for the Kohanim? And he said over an explanation that he heard from his Rebbe Rav Pam, and it was based on the pasuk that we have, the phrase that we're familiar with from the Navi in Yeshayo in Perek Lamed, "V'ho einecha ra'os es morecha." That is to say, that one of the things that we're missing, one of the things that we are mourning with the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, is our lack of exposure not only to the Mikdash, but to the Kohanim in the Mikdash. Think about it, he said. 3 times a year at least, plus if there are any other various karbonos or nedavos that we wanted to bring throughout the year, but at least 3 times every year we would go up Aliyah L'Regel to Har HaBayis, bring karbonos, and we would see the Kohanim. We'd be in an environment of Kedusha and in an environment of Godlus, of Ruchnius. Rapam stressed how important that was, how indispensable it was to our growth as people and as Obdei Hashem. You see, when we stay in our home environment, and this doesn't matter if the home environment is Tinek or Talmon, Beit Shemesh or Boston, Yerushalayim or Beitar, Modin Elite, it doesn't, Mea Sharim, Rabbi Shemesh Bet, it doesn't matter where you live. If you stay in your home environment, willy-nilly, memela, through osmosis, you accept limitations. You accept the limitations of your context. Whatever is considered normal where you are, and we all know that that changes from neighborhood to neighborhood, so that becomes your definition of normal. Whatever becomes deviant in your neighborhood, unfortunately, Rahman al-Fan, becomes your definition of deviant. And more to the point, whatever is great in your neighborhood, whatever that surah, whatever that demus of greatness is, that's your conception of greatness. And that's wonderful, except for one thing. It's limited. Because wherever you are, there are other great people. There are other greater people. But without exposure to such people, we are limited, and therefore we limit ourselves. And therefore, said Rav Pam, one of the greatest blessings of the Beis HaMikdash was the Aliyah L'Regel, the exposure to the Kohanim, to the Kohen Gadol. Each time we went, he said, it stretched our conception of the possible, of the doable. All of a sudden, we would have a she'ifa for godless. I know in my personal life, I've had more than one experience of this, but the most dominant experience for me, I am from the Dor Asher Lo Yada Es Yosef. I got to YU a few months after the Rav died. But Hashem gave me a matana, and I was in the shir of Mori Virabi Hagon Rav Rosenzweig. And I'll never forget, I was in the shir for many years and many year relationship with him now, but I remember at some point in that first year I was in the shir, I didn't know what he was talking about. I was overwhelmed. We learned Masechta Pesachim, first Perek. I did so poorly on the final, he was shocked, he admitted to me, that I came to pick it up. Because even though the shir is midas hadin, there is no higher, more demanding shir in the world, I believe. The one bit of rachmanis is, you don't have to actually pick up your test. You have to take it. You have to look at him the next day. But you don't actually have to pick up the test. And I naively did. He couldn't believe it, because no one who did badly as I did had ever come to pick up a test. But I remember, despite not really understanding everything that first zman, at some point I remember having this out-of-body experience as I stared at the other 60 people in the shir, all of them smarter than me, or learned, busily scribbling notes to something, I don't know what he was talking about. But I remember having this feeling of, wow, I'm in the presence of greatness. This is my link to the Masorah. This is my link to the people who came before him. Years later, Schechter's Hesped, Rabbi Willig's Hesped, different Hespedim of Rav Avadya, Rav Meir Tversky speaking about him in a Sichos Moser, to hear the way other great Talmid Chachamim, other great Rosh Hashivas were just in awe of him. The Arisha Bechabura, he was not an equal among peers. He was like on a whole nother level. But one thing I think is important for us to realize, as much as it's important for us to appreciate Gedolim, to appreciate the fact that Misas Tzadikim Kesreifas Beis Elokeinu, when we lost the great one this past year, it's not just about the brain. L'chablo ben chayim l'chayim, but I said in various contexts, Rosenzweig isn't only the greatest genius that I've known, he's also the greatest tzaddik. Every one of these Gedolim, it's not just their brain. It's the neshama, it's who they were. People who were close to the Rav, Brander was a sharis of him, many other people maybe in this room who were talmidim, they could tell you, Gadol Shimusho Yosar Milimudo. It wasn't just the learning and the genius. It was the heart, the soul, the neshama, the mesiras nefesh, the hasmada. You don't have to have a mind like a gadol to have a great neshama, to have a great sheif, a great avas Yisrael, to have a great hasmada. You don't have to have their IQ to have their dedication and to put in their effort. There are legions of stories about Rav Avadya. I don't want to mention them now, but just one. Because it's not a most of the stories, including, forgive me, even some of the ones I've already been telling, are not really guttle stories. I call them brain stories. What do they have to do with you and me? We can't even relate to that. But the godless that you see among some of these tzaddikim, and as I say, in their hearts, and their love and their dedication to other Jews, there's no reason that can't be you or me. We could be. That we can relate to. We should be able to relate to. So of all of the stories, I'll be honest with you, I didn't hear everyone, I haven't bought any of the 10 biographies that have been written in the last 2 months about Rav Avadya, but of all the stories that I heard, 10's for sure, the one that by far was the most impressive to me was the one, I think they said, if I'm mistaken in the dates, forgive me, I think it was 10 years ago when he had his first heart attack and he was rushed to the hospital and the doctor said he needed surgery immediately and Rav Avadya begged for a postponement of 3 hours. Why a postponement? What's 3 hours? So they gave it to him because one thing for sure, that even if you weren't a voting member of Shas, you knew you didn't argue with Rav Avadya. What was the explanation? What did he give? Why did he have to go home? Because before the heart attack, he was in the middle of writing a tshuva for an aguna. And I don't know what the details were, but he was convinced that if chas v'shalom, something should happen to him on the operating table, no one else would be prepared to give that heter. If he didn't matter that aguna, and God forbid something happened to him, she'd be an aguna for life. And therefore he risked his life for just 3 more hours so that he could write that tshuva and he could go under the anesthesia with a lev shalem. Now that, ladies and gentlemen, that's a guttle story. Not a brain story, but a guttle story. And that is not only, I hope, an inspiration to us, but it should be a machayev to us. Every one of us can love our fellow Jew. And every one of us, in our own way, can work for agunas. And every one of us can have Avas Yisrael like Rav Haji Yosef. No question about it. Even Ashkenazim, I'm sure he would agree. And that's also part of our Avelus. Because without the Beis HaMikdash, without the Mishmari Kahuna, we don't have as many opportunities, certainly not on the level, not as regimented in our annual lives, to be exposed. So when we ask ourselves, how can I in 2014 really mourn a building that I never knew existed and never experienced? Let's say one of the tricks is to mourn the other things that were missing that went along with it. And this is one of those things which I think we can more easily relate to, and I think is one of the themes that Ezra Palm suggested of this kina. Again, kina yud, echa yoshva chavatzal sashara, nevedam amra, nipino sehara, v'no mishmar osam kwanim b'nei aron, yudu arabayim mizrabayim aron, v'chol tivkei, chumash esvarim, kenera koeim v'navi, b'yom ha-kipurim, al dama nishvatu v'rapin kitrim, Hayu oivi malivi in belof my left and kibilu Allah rosa rahlem kibilu Allah rosa rahlem hur avo utmo mi mai mi lahem kibu dolor nela mi mi lahem yetei alor ava get nifas kimura ifra rosh kipas nera ne umaraz nifas kipashu balechem uvaat no gada yuvas zahra zavana shena samishem yu. The Kina ends with a tefillah for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Tavo tamriach v'chashti tariach, chadesha atmosenu tafriach, v'reach nichochenu kekedem tariach, v'shochoncho tariach shulei chamas aviach. We turn our attention now to the most famous kina that's directly about the Bali Masora, the Gedolei Hador, and that is kina Chaf Aleph, Arze halavanon, hadire haTorah, balei treisin b'mishno b'gemara, giburei koach, hamala b'tahara. And yet, despite all that, damam nishpach, nasha gevura. This is, of course, the reference to what's known as Asara Haruge Malchus, which we also mention on Yom Kippur. We have a kina about the 10 great Tanoim, Gedolei Yisrael, Bali Masora. This is not a historical kina. Scholars have pointed out that these Tanoim didn't all live, let alone die, at the same time. But nevertheless, as we said before, Ala Yiddish Etzaras and an Ein Grace Etzara, it's all one. Tisha B'Av is not a day for historical and academic precision. Adarabba v'adarabba. It's the commingling of Tzar, which is the call of the day. And here, within the narrow theme of these, the death of Tzadikim, of Gedolim, we have this most well-known and famous of kinos. It's also one of the most graphic and vivid of the kinos, describing in very painful detail how the various Tanaim were killed, the torture, the gvura which they displayed while they were being tortured, as we say itself, referred to in the kina, and the line beginning with pei, it was a misa meshuna v'chamura, misa meshuna, terrible, horrible, abnormal deaths. It's one thing for a tzaddik to die before his time, one thing for a tzaddik to be killed by his enemies. It's another thing for these tzaddikim to have been killed before their time by our enemies with misa meshuna, with abnormal and cruel achzari deaths. Dying al Kiddush Hashem, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, Gufcha Tahor, B'chomine Tahara, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Dying al Kiddush Hashem. People go, whether it's these Tanaim or others, we go to Kivrei Tzadikim. We want to be close to people like this, people who lived like this and who died like this. And one can't help but thinking, this, without any taking away anything from the Tanaim or Tzadikim in general, or Bonim in general, over the years who've been Moser Nefesh, one can't help but think and recall the words of the Eish Kodesh in source number 12, it's on the back of your sheets, where he makes the simple but provocative point that Hamoser Navshavas Hashem, and therefore the greatest Kiddush Shem Shemayim. We're in Beit Pagan, we're not that far from Har Herzl. Yesterday, two of my sons, they're both in different day camps in Beit Shemesh, and both of them, to their great credit, unbelievable camps, unbelievable counselors, the counselors are only teenagers. They took the kids in yesterday, Erev Tisha B'Av, for a day at the Kotel and a day at Har Herzl. It's like Har Moriah and Har Sinai. Akedah and the Torah. And they walked around and they saw the various graves. So when they were telling me about this at dinner, and again, Agav, again, not something you would get living in Chutz La'aretz. I don't just mean that Har Herzl is in Israel. I mean, whatever the analogy would be, still wouldn't happen. It's an Eretz Yisrael Dika mentality to take little kids to Har Herzl, to a cemetery as part of a day camp in the summer. Now, that's something we should be proud of. So we're having the Suda, the pre-Suda, Suda Mavsekes. And the kids were telling me about this, and Baruch Hashem, they were all very moved and excited to show me with their phones and their iPods, the pictures they took of this kadosh and that kadosh. So I thought they left me one thing as the father, that I could at least share with them. I said, you know, there's a true story. I said, there's a very famous yeshiva that's right nearby. It's not called Brus. It's also a good yeshiva. There's a very famous yeshiva called Kol Torah. And before I could get out the next word, my 14-year-old said, ah, but they told us that story too. The story, for those who aren't familiar, was of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who had Talmidim, if I remember correctly, this was in Elul. And the Talmidim, they came to the Rebbe to tell them they were going to miss some yeshiva. That's already a pretty impressive yeshiva that they went to tell the Rebbe. But I guess if your Rebbe's Rosh Hashanah Zalman Orbach, so that helps. Why are they going to miss sometimes? Because they're going up north to the various Kibrei Tzadikim. They need to daven, or Zchuyos. Rosh Hashanah Zalman reprimanded them. He says, I could understand the desire to be by Kibrei Tzadikim. He says, I could understand that. But what do you need to go to the north for? 5 minutes from here is Har Herzl, the grave of any soldier who died Al Kiddush Hashem, any died defending Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. That's all the tzidkus, all the kedusha you need. That is Kibrei Tzadikim. Unfortunately, my children mentioned to me that they saw freshly dug graves. The grave of Max Steinberg already has a headstone, and other graves that are so fresh there isn't even a headstone. More kedoshim, more tzaddikim. And of course, in the context of this summer, we can't help but repeat the story with Rav Gustman. I know most of you, if not all of you, know it, but there are stories that bear repeating. It was one of the great Rabbi Alman, excuse me, Dr. Alman, maybe he's a rabbi too, I'm not sure. Professor Alman had been a regular attendee of Rav Gustman Zatzal's weekly shir, which attracted not only the best Talmidim of yeshivas and kololite, but many learned professionals such as Professor Alman. Rav Gustman went with Talmidim to the funeral, and after the funeral, at a time where people don't usually visit, he asked to be taken to see the family. The family, I'm sure, was shocked, but certainly honored by the presence of the great Gadol and Tzaddik. At which point, Rav Gustman told the Almans the following story. Rav Gustman, everyone knew, has one daughter, his son-in-law who lived in Yerushalayim, Brinkner. But he said, you may not know, I also had a son, Meirel. My Meir, he says, was ripped from my hands as I was running away. He was killed right in front of me. He talks about Meir's shoes. He was able to save the shoes of his Meir, and now he lives with the guilt of the fact that while he was hiding in the forest some point later, he had to barter the shoes of his Meir for food. And he closes his eyes at night and he sees his son Meir. How pain he is, how much he loved Meir, how much he misses Meir. And then he turned to the Almans and he told them that my Meir is in a special minion in Shemayim, the minion of the Kedoshim. Your son Shlomo has also now entered that minion. And my son Meir is going to welcome your son Shlomo. And he's going to tell him, I have entree to the special minion because I died because I'm a Jew. That gives me a ticket into this exclusive minion. I can daven here. But you, Shlomo, you died defending the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Said Rav Gustman to the Almans, my mayor is a kadosh. He is holy. But your Shlomo is kodesh hakadoshim. He's not only in the minion, he is the shliach tzibur of that heavenly minion. I'm afraid that this year for Yom Narayim is going to be steep competition for the Amud. A lot of Shlichei Tzibur, a lot of Kedoshim who died, they were Moser Nefesh Ba'ad, B'nei Yisrael, not just Hashem, but defending our people, defending our land. Too many chazanim this year. too many tzaddikim, too much dying al Kiddush Hashem. Azel banona dira Torah, balei tresim b'mishna b'gmara, giburei korech amala b'tara, damam nishpach v'nashpach v'yara, ina Yotis a baskol shalo iniach klo mitaras mojlu shema vracher ben chutzpis bim avrad aparach nisrav echa bim mendura sagra lozim en shemua bachon ra chazaya tenufa bisho katuruma tarfu arye mendura sagra lozim en shemua bachon ra chazaya tenufa bisho katuruma tarfu arye vekvira yitim arav loisi bol yazra Amit Birkayim Koshlos Chelek Yaakov Moshia Beisera Litzedek Yimloch Melech Yomar Shalmu Yimei Evlech Laoro Nisa Venelech Next, Kina, Kina Chavbet, Hacharishu Mimeni Ve'adabera. Leave me alone, let me speak out. A survivor who needs to speak. We're familiar often with survivors who don't want to speak, who often can't speak, but sometimes there's a phenomenon that's just the opposite. A survivor who needs to speak. The theme of this Kina in particular is a painful one, the death of children. The theme is comes up in a number of places. If you take a look, two stanzas down, B'sulosai u'bachurai nasach nesicha, my maidens, my youths were uprooted with devastation. Ol alai v'tapai nechshu kitzon tivcha, right? My children were taken like sheep, like lambs to the slaughter. The next one below that, you have the adas se pizura, like the little lambs, flock of sheep that are scattered. And then you have something which is actually discussed in the tshuva literature, although we won't be discussing those details, but you have a reference later in the Kina to something even more unique in Jewish history from the time of the Crusades, presumably it's referring to, of parents who killed their own children out of a rachmanus, to make sure that the children wouldn't be taken away and baptized for shmad. It's a big discussion of the Bali Atosvos and other Rishonim, whether this was allowed or not. So maybe familiar, some of you may recall this as one of Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik's scary courses in Bernard Revel Graduate School. I think I'm allowed to remember that on Tisha B'Av because it's scary. Famous tshuva in the Rishonim about a father who was stopped midway, killed some of his children but couldn't kill himself. He had to live with that. Did he need tshuva or not? Very, very painful. The death of children. What we have here in these kinos and these themes is a living history of what was prophesied in the Tochacha. Take a look at source number 13. From the end of the Tochacha in Dvarim, after all of the terrible things that are mentioned, the horrible punishments that are predicted, the Torah tells us, after all, Gam kol choli v'kol maka asher lo kasuv b'sefer haTorah azos yaleim Hashem alecha ad hishamdach. After all of this that's already been written, Hashem is going to bring even more torture, more punishment, more pain. Even that hasn't been written down, Hashem will bring on you to destroy you. The question is, after all of those psukim, tens of psukim of Tochacha, which are graphic and painful to consider, what could possibly be left? What could still happen to Am Yisrael that hasn't yet been mentioned in the Tochacha? What is Asher lo kasuv b'sefer haTorah hazos? So there is a tradition which is completely mysterious. We don't know its origins. But it is quoted by a number of Mefarshim on this Pasuk. If you want one example, you can take a look at the Meshech Chachma. But he's not the only one. The Meshech Chachma quotes this Pasuk and he says, what is Asher lo kasuv b'sefer haTorah hazos? Zu Misas Tzadikim. And if you have the Rabbi Cooperman edition, he has a footnote there. We don't know the source of this tradition. So if Rabbi Cooperman couldn't find it for the Meshech Chachma, you can be sure that we don't know what it is. But it's not only in the Meshech Chachma. Number Mefarshim quote this Mesorah Biyadenu, Zu Misas Tzadikim. If you look in Tochacha, that's actually not mentioned. But apparently, according to this tradition, it's alluded to. Question is, and this is addressed by a number of the Bali Drush, if Misa Tzadikim is part of the Tochacha, so why not explicate it? Why not say it explicitly? Why allude to it with a remez, Asher lo kasov b'sefer haTorah hazos? So one of the very fine contemporary collections of when a tzaddik dies, aside from the obvious pain, the heartbreak is magnified because of the asher lo kasov. All that could have been written, but will not. The asher lo kasov. All that could have been accomplished, but will not be. Misa Tzadikim is so painful because we mourn not only for the past, but also for the future lost. All the Chidushei Torah, Asher Lo Kasav. All of the greatness, which was in potential, which will never be brought to fruition. All of the acts of Chesed, Asher Lo Kasav. All of the Kiddush Hashem, Asher Lo Kasav. And when we think about the death of children, any child, especially those young adults who have displayed so much potential, as those who have been murdered this summer, isn't that part of the heartache? Isn't that also what we are, or at least ought to be, mourning? Not only the lives that were cut short, per se, not only the immediate and present pain to their parents and their families and their communities, but perhaps the greatest depth of our sorrow is the Asher Lo Kasav. All of the things that they could have done, that they were on their way to doing, and will never complete. Think of what these young people, three boys who were kidnapped, the various soldiers, think of all that they could have done in their learning in yeshivas. Maybe some of them would have stayed and learned for many years in kolel and become Tamid Chachamim and Rabbanim. Asher lo kasav, will never know. Think of what some of them might have accomplished in their short or perhaps long stay in the army. Maybe the next hero, maybe the next David HaMelech. We'll never know. Asher lo kasav. Maybe one of them would have become a doctor. Who knows how many lives he could have saved and helped. Asher lo kasav. The chesed that they could have done. How they would have been as husbands, fathers. There was a story not long ago of Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau having a reunion with the family of someone who helped save him. If you're familiar with his biography, there was a Russian POW who helped him in the camps and brought him food. Kids weren't meant to survive the camps. So aside from the nes of Hashkacha, which is of course the real reason why he survived, but al derech hateva, the shluchim of that Hashkacha, were a number of people throughout his time in the camps. And one of them was this Russian POW, and he, years and years he was trying to find him. And it turns out, we see, and we should continue to see for many years, all the Asher Kosav, what Rabbi Lau's accomplished, now what his children are accomplishing, what his grandchildren were accomplished. They're writing books and books of Jewish pride, Asher Kosav. But think of the 1.5 million children who didn't make it out of the Holocaust. All the children who died here or anywhere. What we mourn for those tzaddikim, those kedoshim, as not only the immediate loss, but we mourn the future lost. We mourn the Asher Lo Kasav.
Karnam hagbia beharima, arid vesichi vahima, vokal nihi arimima.
The next kina, very famous kina chav gimel, ves navi chatasi yishmima. This is the story, as we say in the next stanza, al benu bas rabbi shmal kohen gadol. This is a kina based on the story, which is also in the Medrash and in the Gemara Gittin, two children of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol who were sold into slavery. As the Kinah says poetically, and the Gemara and the Medrash describe in more detail, they were each very beautiful and very handsome, a boy and a girl, each sold to different masters. That wasn't bad enough, but the masters had an idea. They viewed these children like horses to be bred. I have a beautiful boy, you have a beautiful girl, let's breed them. And they put them in a room together in the pitch black, and they waited outside. It's just amazing, parenthetically, the depravity that that symbolizes of that society. They just assumed that if you put these two people together in a room, two people who, as far as they were concerned, were strangers, that something would happen that night. But anyway, they assumed that they would mate and hopefully breed beautiful children. They can make lots and lots of money treating Jewish children like horses. And each of the children avoided it. Each one said no, because they each knew of their yichus. Yichus is sometimes abused, but it's a powerful thing when used appropriately. As Rabbi Dr. Abram Tversky likes to say, his father used to tell him, Tzapasnisht. It's beneath you, it's not becoming of you. That's an appropriate use of Yichus. And it's a Mechayev, it holds us to a higher standard. So these children said about themselves, Tzapasnisht. As we say in the Kina, the girl, she said, how could I do this? Look at towards the end of the Kina. Bas Yocheved Eich Le'evet Hinasei. I'm a princess. How can I just be with the slave? And he says, Nin Aaron Eich Le'shivcha Yihinosei. I'm a prince, a child of Aaron a Kohen. Of course, when the sun came up, or Boker, Zebezeh Kihikiru, they recognized that their brother and sister, Hoy Achi, Hoy Achos. They hugged each other. Yachad v'nitchabaru ad yotasa nishmasam v'nishima. Overwhelmed, I guess, with the emotion, the sadness, the happiness, the commingling of I don't know how many emotions, they died hugging each other. Many years ago I heard, if I remember correctly, try to be maybe Gula Lolam, I think it was from Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger, but I can't be sure, but I heard from someone shir, a beautiful idea on this kina in the name of Rabbi Yashiv. That's how Rabbi Yashiv suggested that this kina is a metaphor for the plague that we have now of sinas kinam, the lack of avas Yisrael. He said, metaphorically, what do we do, each of us, in our chugim, in our crowd, in our chevras, in our hashkafas, in our cliques? Each of us, we stay in our own corner of the room. Throughout the darkness of the night of Gullus, we're on one corner or another. Someone will suggest a shidduch, literally or figuratively. What, me? With him, with her, with them? That's not my hashkafa. It's beneath me. The darkness of Gullus keeps us apart, keeps us thinking that we're better than the other, that we're different than the other, that the other is a slave. As the Netziv says, the problem with the sinas chinam was that anyone who had a different way of doing mitzvos, chash doleim kapi karis, or in this case, says Rabbi Yashiv, like slaves. And only when the sunlight of truth in geula, hopefully partial geula is enough for this, on the light of day, we realize that he or she is not the other, they're not a slave, they're not worse than us, but they're actually our brother and our sister. The kina is powerful enough, literally, but this metaphoric explanation of the kina, to me, has a layer of meaning which is particularly resonant. Many have pointed out that perhaps most unique, even though somewhere we've been told that it's important, we don't really believe it. It can't be as important as tefillin, as kashrus, certainly not as important as tznius. All sorts of other things, learning Torah. Those are all very, very important. The problem is that we just assume that they're all more important than Avas Yisrael. So I want to share with you, we won't read it all inside, but that's not the point. But I knew I wouldn't have time to do it inside, but I deliberately put it all on the sheet so that no one, not only could no one accuse me of making it up, but more positively, more importantly, so that you can have this and you can take this and you can study this and review it and share it with anyone you know. Sources 14, 15, 16, and 17. They're intentionally overlapping. I wouldn't say they're repetitive or redundant, but they're all overlapping intentionally. At least in my chevra, in my circles, this teaching is most well known from Rav Kook. And I, till recently, had never seen it inside. But we know from the Gemara in Yuma that the Churban HaBayis that we're living through now, the Bayis Sheni, was because, the Gemara says, because of Sinas Chinam. The Gemara tells us that. So Rav Kook, in source number 14, draws the obvious conclusion. If the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, then if we want to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, it will only happen al yidei Ahavas Chinam. That's a quote from Rav Kook. It's real. No one made it up. Here it is. Orot HaKodesh Chelek Gimel. I've heard that from Rav Kook, and it fits with everything we know about Rav Kook. The problem is, if that's all it is, so then it can be segmented. Those who view Rav Kook as their brother, as their Kohen Gadol, So then they're going to live by this. But there are people on the other side of the room who think Rav Kook is an Eved. And until the sun comes up, they're just going to dismiss it. Ah, that's just for the Kooknicks. That's a Merkas Arav Mishigas. Okay. I don't like to call anything Mishigas, but not everyone's a Rav Kooknick. It's okay, you don't have to keep every teaching of Rav Kook. So look at number 14. Maybe you've heard of the Chafetz Chaim, born a little bit even earlier than Rav Kook. The great Baal Halacha and Baal Musar, the Chafetz Chaim. So not so many people know, he has a small kuntras, 22 pages, called Kuntras Avas Yisrael. What does he say in source number 15? The exact same thing as Rav Kook. If we want to be Rotzeo Mitzapesh Yibaneh Beis Mikdashenu, M'chuyavin Anu L'takein Es Asher Kilgalnu. Ba'osu Avon Shechatanu Tzrichem L'takein. How do we do that? Yifol kol echad benafshu le'ehov kol echad ve'echad v'Yisrael bein begufo bein bimimono. It doesn't say only the people who dress like you, only people who look like you, only people who think like you. Kol echad ve'echad bein begufo bein bimimono. So you don't have to be a kooknik. You could just be a chavetz chayim yid. I know that there are certain people who would define themselves as Mishneh Berurah Jews. So if you want to be a Mishneh Berurah Jew, you're loyal to the Mishneh Berurah, you're loyal to the chavetz chayim. That's fantastic. You don't ever have to open up anything Rav Kook. It's fine. You still, now you have the Chafetz Chaim telling you. You want to get Mashiach, you want to bring the Gula? We need Abbas Yisrael. You want to call it Abbas Chinam, Abbas Yisrael. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. It's just words. So maybe you're not a Chafetz Chaim guy. Maybe that's a little too litvish for you, a little too, who knows, you're not so musardik. Okay? Maybe you like Hasidus. Look at source number 16. Lived even, born a little bit before the Chafetz Chaim, the Sfas Emes. Parshas Re'eh, the Beis HaMikdash was the Shoresh HaAchdus, he said. And therefore, because the Beis HaMikdash was the Shoresh HaAchdus, Sinas Chinam destroyed it. And therefore, he says, Al Yedei Avas Yisrael, Yenivne Be'ezras Hashem. The Sfas Emes' son, the Imre Emes, traveled to Israel to meet with Kook and of Nachum Chaim Sonnenfeld. There's a very famous letter where he speaks about his, how impressed he was with Rav Kook. He didn't agree with Rav Kook about everything. But he met, the Sfas Emes' son, the Imre Emes, met Rav Kook, the elder of Rav Kook, as they would say. But again, that's not the point. You don't have to be a Kooknik. Who doesn't love the Sfas Emes? The Sfas Emes is like a crossover sefer. They learn it in all the yeshivas now. So you don't have to read the Chafetz Chaim, it's too musari. You don't have to read the Rav Kook, it's too hard. But the Sfas Emes, you want the Beis HaMikdash, he doesn't say anything about learning in Kolel. He doesn't say anything about Tehillim, he doesn't say anything about Tzedakah, he doesn't say anything about Snias, Shabbos, or Kashrus. Says the Sfas Emes, the same thing as Rav Kook and the Chafetz Chaim. If you want the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt, if you want Geula, it will come by Avas Yisrael. And in case none of these are good enough for you, because you're more of a pshat person and a rationalist, and what is it? You want something written more clearly and less flowery. So in fact, I think at least Beremiza, it goes back to an Eben Ezra on Chumash. Lo sisnes achicha bilvavecha, says the Eben Ezra, source number 17, that is the opposite, hefech, of yahavta l'reyecha. It says all of those mitzvos haberem l'chaveru are supposed to be in the tuos belev, and if we can observe them, follow the dictates of the various haberem l'chaveru, personified by Yahavta, that of Shabbos instead of Snias. Those are all important things. We're balanced and holistic people. If you focus on one mitzvah, you've turned that into an avodah zarah. They're all important. But if we're thinking about Geula, the key, the road to Geula, goes through Avas Yisrael. And that's a little bit of the Hatzalah Porta, a little bit of the silver lining of the last few weeks. We should do our best to grab hold to that, make whatever concrete commitments, relationships we can. If we have fostered those, we should maintain them. If we haven't, we should begin now, start today. We should continue whatever we can to work on our Avas Yisrael. We'll go now to Kina Lamed Aleph. Eish tukat bekirbi, bahalosia libi betseisi mi mitzrayim, kini ma'ira laman askira betseisi mi Yerushalayim. The whole kina is structured by contrasting the simcha and the hashkacha gluya of Yetzias Mitzrayim, with the chilul, with the destruction, with the avelos, with the hester upon him of betseisi mi Yerushalayim, with the Khorban. Of course, the power of the Kina is in the contrast, like any good literature or poetry, the contrast is revealing, but it's more than that. The Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Hei Amud Beis, which I quoted for you as source number 18 from Rashi in Eicha, points out that this is a metaphor for the constant plight of the Jew, but not always the plight, but the reality of the Jewish people for good and for bad. Higbiyam ad l'shamayim, and then hishlicham la'aretz. So says Rashi there from the Gemara, bavas achas, v'lo ma'at ma'at. It's not just that we're up high or down low. The point of the image is that it's all or nothing. In one step. It's not in gradations. Me'igra rama, lebira amikta. We're either the highest of the high or the lowest of the low. Rav Chaim Friedlander in the Sifsei Chaim points out, based on this Gemara and Rashi, that what Arkina is trying to communicate to us is the supernatural existence of the Jewish people. We're simply not governed by the rules that govern other nations. Sometimes it's betseisi mi Mitzrayim, and it's for the good, for the simple reason that it's built into the fabric of the universe. We're not meant to be looked at the way other people look at us. It doesn't excuse their lies, their hatred, their anti-Semitism, doesn't excuse anything. But we at least should know we don't want to be judged like every other nation. We want to be judged fairly, but not like any other nation. Because we're the nation that's either on the Igra Rama or the Bira Amikta. There is no middle place for us. It's up to us, as much as we can, to get ourselves to Betseisi Mimitzrayim, to get ourselves into that good place, if you will. But when we are, as we feel like we have been the last few weeks, in very much Betseisi Mirushalayim, with the pain, seemingly crazy things, tractors on busy city streets, suicide bombers, things which don't really make sense if you step back. I think it was a contemporary writer who put it in one of her emails, the unmitigated chutzpah of the Europeans who killed us, who killed our parents, lecturing us on how their children should deal with the people who now want to kill us. Yes, exactly. It makes no sense. In a normal world, people would be embarrassed. How could somebody from England who bombed Dresden, how could someone from Germany, how could they even open their mouth to say a word to the Jewish people? In a normal world, that would be normal. But we don't live in that world. We live in the Betseisi Mitzrayim, Betseisi Yerushalayim. And for good, things that apply to others don't apply to us. But unfortunately, for bad as well. I think it's the minhag in many places. I think we did it last year as well. We'll sing this kina. Please sing along with me. The next kina we'll do is kina lamed vav. Tzion halo tishali l'shlom asirayich. This is one of the kinos which we have by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, known as one of the great Ohavei Eretz Yisrael, Ohavei Tzion. Tzion is tishali. Asking rhetorically, Tzion, won't you inquire l'shlom asirayich, what's happening to us? It's talking about the love that Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael have for each other. And with that love should come looking for each other, wanting to return, coming back to each other. It talks about, towards the end, the smechim l'shavateich, ha-koavim al-shmameteich, u-bochim al-shvarayich. Who are those people who rejoice over your serenity, but they're pained by your destruction? Hopefully we are those who are Tishal et Tzion. Tzion is one of those things which the Gemara tells us is Bai Drisha. The Gemaras in the end of Masechta Ksubas speak about the love that the Chachamim had for Eretz Yisrael. And one of the well-known passages, well, phrases, if you look at source number 19, Rav Chiya bar Gamda Mignadar Afra of Eretz Yisrael. He rolled around in the dirt of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says, where did, I mean, you think about it, if you were going down the street and you saw one of the big gedolim rolling around in the dirt, the bist meshuga, something's wrong. So no, he had a reason, shenemar, ki rotza avadecha esavaneha, vesafari chonenu. Right? Those avadecha, they're rotzu davanim, they love, they desire the avanim of Eretz Yisrael. They're choning the afar of Eretz Yisrael. That's the source. There's something very puzzling, however, when you look at Rashi. Take a look at Rashi in source number 20. So I deliberately bolded the Dibur HaMaskil. That's the Dibur HaMaskil right before this phrase. Just the pasuk Kiratsu Avadecha Esavaneha, etc. It's bizarre. One of the only places in all of Shas where such a thing exists. I don't just mean there's no Dibur HaMaskil, that's bizarre enough. But what's the real problem? Rashi doesn't add anything. What's he quotes the pasuk? Shkoyach. Rashi knew Tehillim. This we know. And even if he didn't know Tehillim, it was just in the Gemara. What is Rashi doing quoting the pasuk? So I heard an answer to this many years ago. I think I first heard it in the name of the three-day Eish. So I tried to look everywhere in the Kisvei of Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, and I couldn't find it. And if I remember correctly, I think I even emailed Dr. Mark Shapiro, who's one of the world experts on the Sridi Eish, and he had never heard of this idea either. Then I heard it somewhere in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Cook. And then, I believe, I finally saw it, if you want to call it in print, in the back of the biography of Rabbi Aryeh Levine. If you know, in the back of a Tzaddik in Our Time, or Tzaddik B'Yushalayim, so in the back of the biography, they have Vertlach of Rabbi Aryeh Levine. And they have the same idea there. So I don't know how the Sridi Eish fits in, but it actually works beautifully. You know that Rabbi Aryeh Levine was a very, very close Talmud of Rav Kook, certainly close to the Tzvi Yehuda as well. So it's very possible that they both said over the same idea. Who originated it, I have no idea, nor does it matter. But all three of the Nevi'im apparently were in the Snabnu, the same idea. What is the answer? You want to know what Rashi is adding? What's the Chiddush of Rashi? It's not about what Rashi says, it's about what Rashi took out. What word from the citation did Rashi leave out? The chiddush of Rashi is in what he deleted, not what he said. Rashi took out the word, or he left out, shenemar. In most of our life, of our religious life, it is and it's supposed to be all about the shenemar. How do I make tea on Shabbos? Shenemar, it says, Neshmir Shabbos Kolchasa, this is what you do. What should I do with the Shemitah produce? Shenemar, the Chazon Ish, I should do X and Y. Am I allowed to marry this person? Says Nigros Moshe, Shanamar, yes or no. Do I owe money to this person? I don't owe money to this person. So the Shach says, Shanamar, yes or no. Our whole lives are supposed to be, we're Torah Jews, we're Shulchan Aruch Jews, about the Shanamars of life. Do this, don't do this. How do I know? Shteit in Pasuk, Shteit in Rambam, Shteit in Shulchan Aruch, Mishneh Berurah, Shmirah Shabbos, Rav Moshe, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Soloveitchik. There are a lot of Shanamars. Our whole lives are based, and we're proud of it, they're based on the Shanamars. But what Rashi was coming to teach us is that even though that's beautiful in so many other areas of life, when it comes to the love that we're supposed to have for Eretz Yisrael, that's not about Shanamar. It is a pasuk, but that's not why Reb Chiya was rolling around in the dirt. There was no Shanamar, but it was Chakuk Aluach Libo. Kiratzo Avadecha Savneh was in his kishkes. It was in his blood. He felt it. To have told Reb Chiya, you know why you're rolling around in the dirt? Shanemar in Tehillim would have been to ruin everything. It would have been to take away everything. Imagine, for example, as a good mashal, another love of a boy for a girl. So they've been dating, and depending on where you come from the societal strata, you can insert how many dates, where they are, how quickly they have to get engaged, and how short the engagement will be. That is something that varies greatly. I don't want to take sides or insult anybody. It could be one date, two dates, or 6 months. That they're dating, and assuming that you're in a community where the boy actually asks the girl, do you want to marry me? Which is almost all communities, I think. So imagine the scene. They've been dating for however long. It's obviously going well. And the boy is with the girl, wherever, again, insert whatever's appropriate for your community. And the moment comes and he says, so my Rebbe told me that I should ask you to marry me. Money, whatever. Right? That would ruin everything. It may be that someone recommended it. It may be that you took advice from someone. But if it's going to be meaningful, it can't be Shenemar. Because they said, because someone said. It's because you feel it. That's what Rashi's coming to tell us. That's the love that these Chachamim had. Of course, on some deeper level, it originates from what's in Tehillim and other in Tanakh. But just because you read that pasuk in Tehillim doesn't mean you have to roll around in the dirt. Haraya, none of us are rolling around in the dirt. So don't we know the pasuk in Tehillim as well as Reb Chiya? The difference is, by you and me, it's a shenemar. And by Reb Chiya Bar Gamda, it was in his heart. When the Tehillim and the Kuzari and Eima Banim Smecha and Kisei Rav Kook and anyone else, Chavetz Chaim, anyone else who's talking about Eretz Yisrael, we could read all the books. We can know it. It's great. That's Shenemar. That doesn't get you to roll around in the dirt, to kiss the floor. That happens because it's in your kishkas, because you feel it. That's something that Rabbi Yehuda Levi had, and that's something that we should all be striving for. It's a very painful story. Those of you who have the Art Scroll Kinos, there's a very good brief summary of the story of those wagons on the bottom there. We have it from Rishonim. We have primary sources, academic sources of this event. But there is a tradition, which I believe may also be quoted here. Yes, it is on the bottom, page 360, if you have the Art Scroll. But you can also see the original copy, it's available. A special letter by one of the Talmidim of the Rishonim named Hillel of Verona. He was a student of Rabbeinu Yonah. And he tells us in the name of his Rebbe that there was not a coincidence that the Jews had this horrible degradation and punishment of the burning of the Gemaras, of the Talmud. That they saw this as a Mida Kenegan Mida, because in an earlier generation they had burned the books of the Rambam. Benu Yonah was one of the great people, antagonists of the Rambam in the Maimonidean controversy. And all the details, I don't know if anyone knows all the details, but at least in some circles sometimes it went so far as to burn the books of the Rambam. And Rabbeinu Yonah, either took part in it or at least felt responsible for it. Ad kidei kach, when he saw this happen, he realized it was the final straw. He realized his mistake. And in fact, they from one of the gedolim, it might have been the pun of, is a wall and sinas chinam. Very powerful and perhaps depressing statement. I'm surely not the first to point out that the upsurge in Avas Yisrael over the last 7 weeks comes towards the end of a year which saw a tremendous upsurge of Sinas Yisrael and Sinas Chinam. Tremendous, tremendous machlokas in Eretz Yisrael and from Eretz Yisrael throughout the Jewish world. And it doesn't matter what you think about Shivyon B'Netel or Giyus B'Tzava, it's irrelevant for now. They're important questions, but they're not relevant at all now. I have a deal I want to make with everyone in the room and anyone else who wants is invited to make the deal. I want to make the following deal. How about we agree that we're never going to call another Jew a parasite? We're going to get rid of that word from our lexicon, whatever we think. But we're not going to ever use such terminology to talk about our fellow Jew. In exchange, other Jews will never ever use the word blood libel or Holocaust to speak about their fellow Jews. That's trade. One group won't call the other parasites, and the other won't refer to blood libel and Holocaust about a Jewish government in the state of Israel. If we could just get rid of that level of language, then we might even be able to have a machlokas l'shem shemayim. And even if many people are shalom l'shem shemayim, but at least it wouldn't be that. Don't you think that would be a tikkun? Isn't that something that we can commit to? We'll never call other Jews parasites. We'll never use the Holocaust or imagery or blood libel imagery to talk about the government of Israel or Jews that you disagree with, or because they're only giving tens of millions of shekel and not 10.5 million shekel to the kollel, they're not the Holocaust, they're not worse than Hitler, and because they don't do everything you want, they're not parasites, they're not ruining the government. Can't we just disagree on a more elevated level? Wouldn't that be a way? That's my little deal, that's my little suggestion, my tikkun for this year. We have to do something about the sinas chinam, and for whatever reason, we merited this upsurge in Avas Yisrael, and I believe it behooves us to grab hold of it and to run with it as long and as far as we can. Now almost 12:45, almost Chatzos, but as I mentioned at the outset, we're going to go a little bit through that until eventually we go into Mincha. Again, anyone who wants or needs to leave should just remember to finish up the davening before you go. We're going to say now Kina for the Holocaust. Of course, we've been speaking about the Holocaust on and off, but it has become somewhat common in recent years to dedicate a particular Kina. And we'll say the Kina that was written by the Baba Varebi. If you have the art scroll Kinos, it's on page 384. Kina Zikaron HaKadoshim Shachorban Europa. Before we read the Kina, just a brief point, not so much to add that we haven't already said about the Holocaust, but just to mention, I think I might have mentioned this last year as well, but to repeat it and to add a little bit, around the time that the news of the Holocaust reached the shores of Eretz Yisrael, which was, given the lack of technology in those days, later than it had been in other parts of the world, there was a big kinos that was held in Yerushalayim by the Chevron Yeshiva that what he thinks is a davar pashut, that the Holocaust is the worst tragedy in the history of the Jewish people, and it should not be minimized by being compared to the Churban. I don't think he disagrees with its connection to the Churban, but it would be to say, but so many people died in the Crusades or the Churban or this, that. Says Ruchas Kosarna, there's no comparable scenario. The Churban, Europa, as he would call it, or the Holocaust, was much, much worse. So why was it much worse? Not only in numbers. He goes further and he makes two points. Number one, says Reb Chas Kosarn, again, I repeat, for those who understand the significance of this, this is one of the great Gedolim, the Chevroner Rosh Yeshiva, says Reb Chas Kosarn, you know why the Holocaust was worse? Because we didn't have an army, and we couldn't fight back. And it's a Chil Hashem that when someone's killing you, that you can't fight back. It's good to say Tehillim too, but if that's all you have, that's a little impotent. Call a spade a spade. That's a Chil Hashem, said the Reb Chas Kosarn. That made it worse. At least with Mana Chorban, we had something. At least now, we have something. Many of you are familiar with Rav Soloveitchik's masterpiece, Kol Dodi Dofeik, The Six Knocks. To me, I remember the first time I ever read that essay, the most riveting and enthralling. I feel like I could hear the Rav screaming it, even though I was in the hallway in the Morgenstern dorm so that my roommate could have privacy talking to his fiance. But fourth floor, for those who are familiar. So I was sitting there reading Kol Dodi Dofeik for the first time, and I felt as if I was reading the English translation. You don't need to read the Hebrew when the original is in Yiddish, unless you just don't understand English. But I don't feel bad about reading English when the original is in Yiddish. So I'm reading the English translation, and there, with one of the six knocks, I hear the Rav screaming, to me at least, Yiddish blood is not hefker. Yiddish blood is not hefker. Doesn't bring them back. But when we send one of those missiles to bomb some Russia Marusha for what he did or what he planned, there is something to that, not only militarily, but spiritually. We tell ourselves and we tell the world, Jewish blood is not hefker. And one of the things we lament, said Reb Chas Kosarn, in the Holocaust, is that Jewish blood was hefker, not just the volume that was spilled, the fact that we couldn't, b'derech hateva, do anything about it. And the second thing he says, very poignant and relevant to current events, said the Chevron of Rosh Yeshiva, you know what made the Holocaust worst? There was no Kfuras Yisrael. People weren't buried. There's no grave for families to visit. There's no date for a yortzeit. How do you know when to say Kaddish? How do you go? Where do you go? So Baruch Hashem, we were zocha just to a miracle of that just this week. All the confusion with the death, the suicide bomb on Friday with Hadar Tobin. A few hours after Shabbos, we hear the announcement. And obviously the Israelis must, the government, the army must have known something even already on Friday, but they didn't know enough. And then already yesterday, I'm sure many of you saw it, it was in the Jerusalem Post, I think Times of Israel website had it also, the story is coming out of how they even got whatever parts, whatever DNA they got. There was another Chayal, who was also from Eli, also an American Oleh, should make us all proud. I don't understand the security issue. They have his picture, his first name, and his parents' names, and quotes from his parents, but they can't use his last name. Someone smarter than me can explain that to me, but okay, anyway. Here you have it again. He risked his life running in with other people into, who knows, a booby-trapped tunnel to try to rescue Hadar. You know, he's alive, dead. Couldn't save him, obviously, but was able to rescue enough of him to not only confirm his death, but to give his family the nechama that the families of the Holocaust never had, Kever Yisrael. That was also one of the miracles which you shouldn't lose sight of with the three boys. Thousands of us and thousands were davening, thousands and thousands of tefillos. It's not right to say that our tefillos weren't answered. They weren't answered the way we wanted them to be answered, that's for sure. But there were nisim and there was nechama, and one of them was the apparently relatively good state, not only finding the bodies, but pretty much complete in good state that the bodies were found in 18 days later, so that the boys could have the kapara of a kvuras Yisrael, and that the families could have the nechama of a grave to bury, and the Kiddush Hashem did that.
Thank you.
Before we move to the last kina, I noticed some people recently coming in, so just let me repeat the schedule. The original and announced scheduled time for Mincha is 1:20, and we will still aim to be pretty much there. But what we will do now, pretty much leading us until we have Mincha, before we get to Asher and Avol Tzion, the minhag is before Eli Tzion, which we'll sing in a few minutes, it's already after Chatzos. We'll end with a little divrei nechama. We'll then stand and sing Eli Tzion. And then what I'd like to do, instead of more speaking, I think you've heard enough from me, but I don't know about you, but I would like to sing. And hopefully we'll sing a little bit appropriate songs, and then we'll finish davening, and then we'll go into mincha. So a little divrei nechama now, and then we'll sing Eli Tzion together in a few minutes. We mentioned last year, and I put a shorter selection of this on the source sheet as well, the amazing comments of Rav Yaakov Emden in his Siddur, in source number 23, where he suggests that greater than all of the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf is the miracle of Jewish survival in the diaspora. How could it be, said Rav Yaakov Emden, when he flows Elu, this idea of the Seh Pezura, a phrase we used already today, the only silver lining of the length of Golos, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, is the longer the Golos, the greater the miracle. How is it that we're still here, we're still fighting, we're still thriving, despite everything we've been talking about today, despite all the enemies, we're still here with Hashem's help. It's an unbelievable miracle and it should give us chizuk. So earlier this year, in commemoration of the 75th anniversary of Kristallnacht, the Council of European Rabbis had their annual meeting, their kinus, in Germany. There's actually a growing Jewish community in Germany. Part of me can't fathom it, and part of me views it as the ultimate revenge. So in keeping with that second half, invited as a guest speaker for that kinos was one of the great gedolim of our time, of Yerushalayim, and of the world, Rav Asher Weiss. But before he spoke and was part of that kinos, he spent Shabbos at a beautiful little yeshiva. I don't know how little it is, but a beautiful, I know it's smaller than the mirror. More than that, I don't know. A beautiful, our people, Anochi Afar ve'Efer. What's the difference between Afar and Efer? Dirt and ashes. Efer, he said, symbolizes the past, something that was but is no longer. It's burnt up, it's ashes. The Efer symbolizes the past. But what about Afar? Seder of Asher Weiss, Afar symbolizes eternity. How so? You look at the Gemara number 24, Gemara Brachos Yud Zayin, we say it every day, it should be familiar to all of us. Mar Bar Avina, ki have a Messiah Salusa, when he would finish Shemoneh Esrei, and now because of Mar Bar Avina, all of us, we say the Elokein Etzor, the extra petition after the Shemoneh Esrei. It's a very, very beautiful tefillah. I'm afraid too often we're rushed or exhausted or distracted by the end, but it's Kedai to have Kavana for every word of that prayer. So what does he say among other things? Umakalai Nafshi Tidom, and then he says, Nafshi Ka'afar L'chol Sia. We say it every day. You ever bother to think what we're saying? What does that mean? My nefesh should be like afar to all those who wish me ill. What does that mean? We want to be like dirt? So Tosfos gives a perish, source number 25. Says Tosfos on the Gemara, Ma afar eno makabo kliya liolam, kein yihi rotzon shezari o yichle liolam. Yichle liolam. Just like Abraham's children, the dust is indestructible. Lo mekabel kalaya. No matter what you do, there's nothing you can do to the dust. It's indestructible. That's the Jewish people. But even better, look at the comments of the Marshal. It's good I typed it for you because the original is teeny, 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 teeny letters. In the back of the Gemara, under the Marshal, you have the Chochma Shlomo, the Marshal, source number 26. After Tosfos, he says, Va'ani shamati. Ma offer hakol dorsim aleha ba'acharkach he doreses akol hadorchim. Af ani lakol mitzarai. Dirt hakol dorsim aleha. Everyone walks all over it. But in the end, the earth is patient. Ultimately, she gets her revenge. Ultimately, the earth swallows them all. And ultimately, comes out on top. Senator Usher Weiss, out of the dust hope and out of the ashes faith, many have tried, but all have failed because Klal Yisrael is eternal. We aren't witnesses to the miracle, we are the miracle. Am Yisrael Chai is an unfolding nes of greater proportions than Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. And emerging even stronger from this latest bit of tzaras is just the latest chapter in this long and sometimes painful, but always glorious book of Afar the Efer, of the indestructibility and the ultimate nitzchias of the Jew. And before we go into Elitzion, I just want to read you one paragraph. We spoke about the theme of mothers and the Chayalei Tzahal, those who have given their lives for us. Unfortunately, as we all know, it did start this year. She's a widow. And earlier that year, she had buried her second son who died in Tzahal. Her first son died years before, younger. Uriel. After Uriel died in battle, not long after that, she said, her quote, her husband died of a broken heart. He never recovered from the loss of his son. Despite the patur that all the boys, she has a number of other sons, could have gotten because of that, a brother who died in battle, not only did all the sons want to go back to Golani, but she as a mother had to sign the patur, which she did. They were all commanders in Sayeret. And then, just a few years ago, on the Gaza border, her son Eli Raz, a husband, a father, a Ben Torah, a tzaddik in life and in death, from not only the Mechina, but living in Eli, chasing after terrorists when one shot him, if I remember correctly, the bullet hit his grenade, and he was killed. Sayeret Golani, a warrior, a Ben Torah, a father, and a husband. So not that long after this, she comes to speak to this group of American Jews and other supporters. The whole speech is worthwhile. You can get it on YouTube. Im lo bara YouTube ella bishvil zeh dayenu. It's Makayim, came out all the filth that's on there. It's just so there could be this amount of Kedusha. It outweighs the goal. You have to see this speech. And it's for sure mutter on Tisha B'Av. Just bring tissues. But she ends the speech with the following few sentences. And I think it sums up all the pain we've been speaking about, but also the triumph. This is a verbatim quote. Though death has dealt me more than one fateful blow, I want you to know that I do not despair. In Morocco, where she was born, I had to walk with my head always bent and in fear. In Eretz Yisrael, I stand tall and proud and unafraid. I pray to God to give me strength and to allow me to see my grandchildren grow up so that I can tell them about their noble father, Eli Raz, and their wonderful uncle, Uriel, and about all the brave fighters who defend our special nation. Tonight I am here to tell you, my dear friends, that no matter how hard the road ahead, our soldiers and our people do not fear the journey. In the names of my fallen sons, I pledge to you that Am Yisrael Chai, the Jewish people, will live on. Now, I'm sure she said all that with a heavy heart, but I can tell you she said it far more confidently and with a firmer voice than I did. What oaths, what gvura. With so many challenges we have, we're surrounded, buffeted. But if we have mothers like this, like Miriam Peretz and Racheli Frankel and Iris Yifra and Bat Galim Sher and so many others, then, as Miriam said, we truly have nothing to fear. And Medinas Yisrael, and this latest chapter in our challenges is painful and is difficult, especially for those directly affected. But we can and we must take nechama in the gevura and the nitzchius, the gevura of the soldiers, the gevura of the mothers, the gevura of the families so affected. They are the key to our nitzchius.
I mentioned that we were going to, before we go to Mincha, sing a little bit. We'll have time for probably three songs, maybe four, we'll see, for Asher Bal Tzion and Mincha. Just one brief introduction to the first song. Ani Mamin is a song that is certainly appropriate now. There are many tunes to Ani Mamin. Which tune is most appropriate now? So, one of the tunes of Ani Mamin is known as the Majitzer Nigun, the Majitzer tune. Everyone knows Majitzer Chasidus is famous for their Nigunim. But this particular song, again, I don't have time to get into all the details, but the story, which I believe is reputable and accurate, is the Majitzer Nigun of Ani Mamin was composed by a famous Majitzer Chosid and singer and chazin named Israel Fastag, who died in the camps. He composed the song according to the Majitzer tradition in a train car on the way to his death. And with all the panic in America, he had a brother, I think, or a son, somebody was in Tel Aviv, but the Rebbe was in America. He promised his Olam Haba to anyone who could get the scrap of paper to the Rebbe. Two young men took up the challenge and they climbed out of a hole on top of the train car and jumped to the side of the road. One of them died on impact, but the other somehow made it. I don't know exactly if he made it to Tel Aviv to give it to that Majitzer or he made it directly to New York, but eventually for Yom Kippur later that year in New York, the Majitzer Rebbe had this tune for Ani Mamin and they sang it in the Majitzer Beis Medrash that first year right away. It's an amazing, amazing story. And apparently, he said the Rebbe, Shaul Yedidya Lazar of Majitz, with this niggun, he said, the Jewish people went to the gas chambers, and with this niggun, the Jews will march to greet Mashiach.